Ideally, they both go, but who should go first? You can cast your vote. In other news, doctors go on strike again. Chair of the BMA Resident Doctors Committee, Dr. Jack Fletcher, said yesterday...
We need Wes Streeting and his team to continue talking constructively at the table to fix this ridiculous jobs crisis that we've got for resident doctors in this country.
But even the doctors seem to be losing interest as the numbers taking part in the poll drops. And Save Our State Schools, the plea from Lord Cameron, who says spiteful Labour is killing off academy schools. If your children are at one, let me know. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, police are reviewing allegations that Lord Mandelson passed sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein when he was in government. Documents appear to show he sent on emails while he was business secretary in 2009. Downing Street has ordered an urgent review into Lord Mandelson's contact with Epstein while he was a minister, but the SNP's leader in Westminster, Stephen Flynn, says Sir Keir Starmer should also apologise.
The Prime Minister knew that Peter Mandelson was pals with Jeffrey Epstein. He knew what Jeffrey Epstein had been convicted of previously, and he still chose to appoint Peter Mandelson as his ambassador, a political appointment as his ambassador to the United States.
Lord Mandelson quit the Labour Party on Sunday and has previously denied any wrongdoing. Separately, Sarah Ferguson's charity, Sarah's Trust, has announced it'll close. It follows new revelations about the former Duchess of York's friendship with Epstein. In other news this morning, a review has found several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. Mohammed Omar Khan murdered 15-year-old Harvey Wilgoose last February. It's emerged All Saints Catholic High School didn't access Khan's behavioural record before transferring there. Caroline Wilgoose has told LBC that she believes her son would still be alive if concerns were acted on.
If they'd have looked at his phone, they would have seen that he'd got an unhealthy interest in weapons and that could have been dealt with. But they just took it off him and that were it. So he's been let down. They've both been let down, but I won't ever forgive him.
The trust that runs the school says it has fully implemented the review's recommendations. There's been more Russian airstrikes on Ukraine's capital overnight. The attacks targeted Kyiv's energy infrastructure during freezing temperatures. Officials say more than 1,000 homes have been left without heating following the strikes. Families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. Charities have welcomed the £10 million funding and says it'll help remove barriers to treatment. And Elon Musk is merging his space and AI businesses into a single company. The world's richest man has repeatedly said he wants to develop tech to allow data centres to operate in space. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,275. It closed up 51 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.16. LBC weather. A wet and breezy day for most, with some hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tonight is your last chance to get up to 25% off flights in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Plus, get up to £500 off package holidays. Beat the blues. Book the beach. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven, Tuesday, February the 3rd. It's time for Nick Ferrari's sack race again. Last month it was a disgraced water boss and a chief constable. I'm delighted to say one of them went, although he retired. This time it's Lord Mandelson and Baroness Moon. In a perfect world, they'd both be dumped out of the House of Lords. But who should go first? We'll give you the background to their egregious offences, or alleged egregious offences, I suppose I'd better say, and then take your votes. In other news...
Serial killer Steve Wright has finally admitted to murdering one of his victims, but experts warn there could be others. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, live with the details.
The idea to put asylum seekers in new council houses. Now, Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood spoke with me last week about finding solution for housing these people.
There is no one silver bullet. I wish that there were that I could implement and make these problems go away overnight. We do need a solution for housing asylum seekers.
1 year on from the murder of the 15-year-old schoolboy Harvey Wilgoose, you remember the boy who declined a Martin was not attending school in Sheffield because of the amount of knives. His parents, Mark and Caroline, have been speaking with LBC.
If they'd have done what they should be doing, Arvid'd still be here today. And that's, I think we all feel that.
I mean, that's the worst for me. There was 130 incidences at the other school.
And the claim that Labour is being spiteful in killing off state schools or academies. This is made in a newspaper article with Lord Cameron. Here he is speaking back in 2015 as David Cameron and as Prime Minister about the implementation of free schools.
I want more parents to wake up with that security, that stability, that knowledge that their child is going to a great school. Free schools are delivering that.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So let's get straight to it. Of course, you heard a full report on Lord Mandelson, the latest developments there, possible police involvement, possible passing on of sensitive information. But let's, of course, remember there's someone else still attached to the House of Lords, who I think taken some kind of lease, which is Baroness Mohn. So I said at the top, in a perfect world, they both go. But who is the more egregious of the offenders, would you say? Well, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins us now to remind us, of course, the background on both these people who've been in the spotlight. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, two semi-disgraced figures. It's Mohn versus Mandy. Who will be sacked from the House of Lords first? Well, the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, admitted yesterday that this government wants to see both of them gone.
Whether it's about Peter Mandelson or Michelle Mohn or other peers who have brought the other place into disrepute, that there needs to be a process for the removal of members of the other place and their peerage.
So will it be Baroness Michelle Mohn for her involvement in a PPE scandal? So as a 28-year-old, she first talked her way into Selfridges in London. She came out with a deal to sell her own bras. She went on to make that a multi-million pound brand worn by women everywhere.
Helena Christensen, Girls Aloud, Mel B from the Spice Girls, and it does really help us. We are always in the papers and magazines, and we love it, and they love it.
She went on to appear on telly shows like The Apprentice with Sir Alan Sugar.
Michelle, do you have nice people in your organisation?
Yeah.
How would Lohit fit in with you?
I think he would fit in really well. I mean, I love you, Lohit. You're great, but I think what's missing and what Sir Alan was looking for was that fire in your belly. And if you had that, I think you could have been a serious contender.
Now, she was made a Tory peer and elevated to the House of Lords in 2015. Her firm went on to then make around £60 million selling PPE during COVID in one of the government's so-called priority lanes. But the government later sued. When it emerged, many were defective, unable to be used. She eventually admitted she did lie about her involvement in the company, but maintained she'd done nothing wrong.
I was protecting my family, and I think people will realise that I'm a beneficiary as well as his children and my children. So, yes, of course. I don't honestly see there's a case to answer. I can't see what we've done wrong.
Now, Nick, the government says that they have breached a contract there and is desperately trying to claw some of that millions of pounds back for the taxpayer. Or, Nick, will it be Peter Mandelson, an architect of New Labour, instrumental in getting Tony Blair into Downing Street? He resigned in 1998 after failing to declare a loan, left government again in 2001 over a passport scandal, but went on to win the seat of Hartlepool the very same year.
And they underestimated me because I am a fighter and not a quitter.
He came back to serve as business secretary until Labour's downfall in 2010 and made the comeback of all comebacks when he was appointed as US ambassador under Keir Starmer.
We need to benefit from a bigger and better international trading system.
Thank you very much. It was beautifully stated. What a beautiful accent. I'd like to have that accent. Thank you.
My mother would be proud.
He was praised for his relationships, including with President Trump, but tranche after tranche of files from the Epstein documents ultimately led to his downfall for a third time for his relationship with the then sex offender.
I regret very, very deeply indeed carrying on that association with him for far longer than I should have done. I fell for his lies. We realised that we had been wrong to believe him. He's a charismatic criminal liar.
And now, Nick, a string of emails alleging lobbying when he was business secretary, forwarding on emails from Number 10, and, of course, those embarrassing photos on basically every newspaper yesterday of him in his underwear allegedly at Epstein's house. The government wants both of them to go of their own accord. So far, it's not happening. MPs are saying it's time to strip the whip.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reporting. Right, more on the possible defenestration of Baroness Moan with David Conn, the investigations editor or correspondent at The Guardian, who led the paper's inquiry into that. But let's start with the one that's slightly more topical, which is the allegations concerning Lord Mandelson. I'm bringing to the conversation Catherine McLeod, now Baroness McLeod, who served as a special advisor to Alistair Darling when he was Chancellor at the time when some of these emails were allegedly passed on. Also, former political editor of The Herald and joining me now. Thanks very much for carrying on, Baroness McLeod. Can you explain the significance of these emails that were allegedly passed on? What makes them so significant and potentially so egregious?
Well, they're a complete and utter betrayal of trust. When you're sitting down at the cabinet table with a colleague, you should be able to say what you think and be sure that it won't leave these four walls. I know that sometimes that's an ill-founded conclusion to draw. But things were very fraught then. The economy was in a very precarious position. The government was fighting to keep the economy afloat. And to think that one of your colleagues was walking out the door and sending your copies of your confidential conversation to somebody in another country who could move the markets just is unspeakable.
Also suggesting, of course, that you should lean on the former Chancellor, Alistair Darling.
Well, they did, but, I mean, that was quite common. We were used to the investment bankers leaning on, but the idea that a cabinet colleague was suggesting that they do that just shows, you know, the low to which Peter Mandelson, I'm afraid, had sunk.
Can I ask what it says about Sir Keir Starmer and the fact that he appointed him, Lord Mandelson, as our man, or Mandy, in Washington?
Well, I think he took a gamble and it did not work. I don't know how much he knew about Peter Mandelson. I think it displays a lack of curiosity, at least, because Peter Mandelson had form, he had a track record. I do not quite understand why he was appointed. He'd obviously friends in high places. I mean, some people at the time did think that Peter Mandelson, because he was so experienced, would probably be an asset in a difficult time with their relationship with the United States. But certainly, in hindsight, we know it was a huge mistake.
If Lord Mandelson were to return to the House of Lords, what would you say to him, Baroness?
Well, I probably wouldn't say anything at all because I was always pretty far below the salt. He didn't really talk to me. I don't think he should be there. Surely he won't have, you know, thick skin disease, return to the House of Lords. But he certainly discredits politics. It's fighting for its reputation now, and he certainly wouldn't enhance him.
And lastly, how do you view him?
Well, I think he is a traitor. I don't know if he sold secrets to Epstein, but he certainly gave them away, and I think it's reprehensible.
You're not mincing your words. I'm grateful for your input. Thank you, Catherine. Now, Baroness McLeod, who was special advisor to Alistair Darling while he was Chancellor at the time when these emails were allegedly passed on, but also former political editor of The Herald. Well, let's bring another journalist into the conversation. David Conn, investigations correspondent at The Guardian, led the paper's investigation into Michelle Moan. Just to remind the listeners, of course, this also impacted on the health and well-being of the nation, in a sense, during COVID, didn't it, David? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, obviously, as you were saying earlier in the programme, the firm that Michelle Moan and her husband were linked to got £200 million contracts from Boris Johnson's government to supply PPE during COVID. And one of those contracts, which was for £122 million to supply sterile surgical gowns, which are very, very important life-protecting PPE. And this was obviously at a time when there was no vaccine, and obviously COVID was a lethal, deadly virus. And those gowns turned out to be unusable. They lost, you'll remember, the High Court case. Yep. The judgment came on the 1st of October. By then, their company, PP Medpro, had been put into insolvency, and it's now in liquidation, and the government hasn't had a penny of the money back, which is up to about £150 million. It's probably more than £150 million with interest and costs.
Just remind me, there was an investigation by the NCA, the National Crime Agency. Where are we with that, David?
So the investigation by the National Crime Agency into whether criminal offences were committed in the procurement of the contracts to PPE Medpro. So in the actual granting of the way that the contracts were granted by Boris Johnson's Conservative government to that company where Michelle Mohn was a Conservative member of the House of Lords and she had the political connection. If you remember, she made the first contact with Michael Gove and they had the VIP lane, which actually gave high priority to people with political connections. And the NCA launched that investigation in May 2021. We're coming up to 5 years and they say that it's still ongoing and that they've not been charged, but the investigation is still ongoing.
Lastly, what do we know about the whereabouts of the Baroness Mohn?
Good question, but not in the House of Lords. So she took a leave of absence from the House of Lords, and she said, I think she said she doesn't want to be in the Conservative Party anymore. She hasn't been in the House of Lords now for since we broke the stories at the end of 2022.
David, thanks for that. Having a slight echo on your line, we'll finish. David, thank you. David Conn, investigations correspondent at The Guardian, led the paper's investigation into Michelle Mohn. So who goes first, Baroness Brar or our former Mandy in Washington? Cast your vote. Also after the news.
Serial killer Steve Wright has finally admitted to murdering one of his victims, but experts warn there could be others. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, live with the details.
And the possibility more junior doctors or resident doctors strike until the summer. Health Secretary Wes Streeting spoke with me in November.
When you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice.
And had that message for one doctor who phoned in and to put questions during Call the Cabinet. More on that after this. It's 7:16, just LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Police are reviewing allegations that Lord Mandelson passed sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein when he was in government. A review has found several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most, hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M20 westbound to Junction 2 at Rootham. It's following an accident and traffic was being held. It's all being released now, but it's slow from Junction 4 at Leybourne. On the M25, it's very busy anti-clockwise at Junction 29 at the A127. That was after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. No Woolwich Ferry running at the moment. That's because of the high tide. Delays in Kew on the South Circular Road in both directions, heading towards Kew Green. Those emergency works are taking place and there are temporary traffic lights in place. On the Metropolitan line, there's still no service between Harrow on the Hill and Watford, and then there's severe delays up to Chesham and Amersham. It's after that track problem from earlier.
This is LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone, even people who know nothing about investing. Like Keith, who thought dividends were a boy band. Jessica, who thought compound interest was a prison dating app. And Sue thought FTSE 100 was a bit of under-the-table fun, which surprised her accountant.
Oh, no.
If we can make investing feel good for them, it's no wonder which have recommended us 7 years running. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7. Headlines are coming to you. Tess, you're going to be the first caller. Just to reflect on this, and I must admit it wasn't until Natasha Clark, my LBC colleague, and indeed David Conn from The Guardian reminded me of the tawdriness of the Baroness Brother Michelle Moon story, and now added, of course, Lord Mandelson. And there's so many things that are great about this country, but isn't this sickening? The so-called elite or the establishment and the way they behave. If anyone else behaved like that in their place of work, if one of my junior producers was found sending the what's called the rundown, that's the list of stories, sending it off to, I don't know, not that they'd have any interest in it, but to Five Live or, I don't know, Radio London, if it still exists, or that station where they're obsessed with David Beckham's left foot, whatever that's called, they'd be out that afternoon. Absolutely, and not a penny compensation. And there's other ways. They can just, I'm going to leave absence from the House of Lords, thank you. And 5 years to investigate Baroness Bra. What is there to investigate? It is so tawdry. And it just, you lose all faith, don't you, in any of them. Look, and many of you are saying on the text, and I agree, they should both go. I know they should both go. But it's just a way of showing that this whole idea of a cleaner politics that was promised us. And I bathe about Baroness Moon, was a Conservative, absolutely. I want to get that out there. But they're both still, effectively, could still go there. Once they've had their leaves of absence. Oh, as I said, it is the front page, or aspects of it, the front page. The Telegraph decides that Mandelson leaked number 10 emails to Epstein. No quotes, no allegations. The Guardian, slightly more cautious, calls for Mandelson to face police inquiry over alleged leak to Epstein. That's why I've been saying alleged. The Daily Mail takes it in a different direction. Labour's dark lord now faces a criminal inquiry. And even the Daily Mirror, which, of course, is very much a Labour-supporting newspaper, they realise they have to splash it. Mandelson police probe Epstein links. The front of the LBC app as well. Lord Mandelson faces criminal inquiry. It's dominating all the websites. There's no point really featuring any other stories just yet. So instead, let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Tess in Coventry. Tess, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ferrari. How are you doing, sir?
Hello, sir. I'm good, thank you. I trust you are too.
Yes, so I actually am struggling to believe, you know, why we are debating who should go first. And I know you have a story to deliver this morning.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was up to me, I'd make them hold each other's hands and kick them out the top of the tower. The reason I say stuff like this is because they are direct representations of British high society. Mm. And we, the people, if we did anything, even 1% of what these people are doing, we would be held accountable, put before a judge, and remanded immediately. There'd be no, we'll come back to this in a couple of weeks and investigate it. You would be in front of the gallows, shall we say.
Yep, you're
and,
right.
And you wouldn't see the daylight again.
No.
Now, I say this from a point of, I run a couple of small SMEs,
right.
And if I'm late for my accounts, I'm getting threatening letters saying that I could be sent to prison for £34. So how are we running away with £150 million and somebody hasn't had their heads rolling, say, to speak? Okay, we don't actually do these sort of things anymore, but she should not even have a voice to speak. And that's for Lady Merton. As for Mr. Mandelson, you know, all the excuses in the world, and don't get me wrong, they have a legal standpoint to say, well, legally I haven't done anything wrong, but if £5 goes into my bank account, I know about it. If £5 comes out of my bank account, I know about it. To say that he's got tens of thousands of pounds coming from a convicted paedophile is abhorrent, to say the least. Now, none of my friends are convicted paedophiles, so no. I don't...
Tess, would you go further? Is it time to start the dismantling of the House of Lords?
100%. And I would not say that all of these lords are bad. I wouldn't say that.
With what would you replace it?
So, me personally, I think we need to start looking at people from all walks of life and to have... You know, I'm not talking about vagabonds or scallywags. I'm talking about professionals. Professionals that could go into, you know, that have come from all walks of life. So, for instance, my father was a very poor man. He's done well. He was a teacher, secondary school math teacher for many years. He now tutors and does accounts. He's done well for himself.
Right.
So he would be, or somebody of his ilk would be a good person to go into that sort of realm.
Here's the one thing, lastly. The one aspect that I do have respect for the House of Lords as a sort of upper chamber is you get people who are supremely successful in the field. Think of Lord Winston in medicine, and I will declare he is a friend. Lord Stevens, the former police officer, they're there to look at legislation about medicine, about policing. You've got former judges. That sort of check is vital, I believe. So it's how we put it back in place, Tess. That's
the key. So, of course, and you know, look, at the end of the day, a lot of these lords have been in the same position for decades.
Yeah.
So what we can say is there is going to be a track record of the good eggs and the bad eggs. And what we've done as a nation is brushed a lot of the little niggly bad egg stuff under the carpet.
Right.
And just and instead, we'll just get rid of all of that and just have a zero tolerance for it. If you're in a position of power where you're already on vast amounts of money and you're relying on the public to buy your lunch every day, you should not have any discrepancies in your work history. You should.
Tess, I'm totally with you. I'll let you get on with your day and running your businesses. Thank you very much for your input. George in Worcester, we'd like them both to go, but who should go first? Good morning.
Hello, morning, Nick. How you doing? Long time, no speak.
Good to have you on.
Yeah, my question is Keir Starmer now going to compel Mr. Mounison to go to America to give evidence like he did, like he is with Prince Andrew?
Well, he can't compel, he can suggest, and he can think, and as he has, as you're absolutely right, he has suggested that Andrew should. I don't think he can physically compel him. Do you think he should, George?
Oh, if Andrew should, if Andrew knows a lot about it, I think Peter Mounison, with his connections to Donald Trump and all of his knowledge, I think he should as well, just to do his do the rightful thing and maybe save himself from whatever's coming.
George, a quick word before I let you go. What does it say about our establishment, our House of Lords, effectively our setup, as it were, in this country?
I think if you're a working man in this country, Nick, it doesn't tell you anything that you don't already know. It's slanted to one side. The working man's being hammered every day. In London, all around the country. Thankfully, I've moved out of London. I'm not in London anymore. The day that I moved out. But everything is slanted against the working man. The establishment are just like thumbing their nose to us all the time and getting away with everything. And that's including... I'm a Labour voter, but this mob that are in now, they're just really doing my head in.
George, have a good day. Thank you. Kay says, we now live in a country where ordinary people are thrown in jail for saying genocide is wrong. People at the top are utterly unaccountable for anything. Mike in Crawley, Moan or Mandelson, could we have a choice? What about a two-for-one, a twofer? Tony, our establishment is totally corrupt. It's filthy. 7:27. We shall return to that story. Maybe think about exactly what we would replace the House of Lords with. But to other news, and the so-called Suffolk Strangler or serial killer Steve Wright, who murdered five women in Ipswich back in 2006, has pleaded guilty to a series of other murders committed some years before. LBC's reporter Joseph Draper has the full details. Joins me now. Joseph, morning.
Nick, morning. Well, there were audible gasps in the newsroom as Steve Wright changed his plea at the last minute at the Old Bailey, finally admitting to kidnapping and murdering 17-year-old Victoria Hall from Trimley St. Mary in Suffolk in September 1999. The 67-year-old also pleaded guilty to the attempted kidnap of another woman, Emily Doherty, then aged 22, in Felixstowe just one day before. Now, of course, he is a prolific serial killer, already serving a whole life sentence for the murder of five other women who he strangled in a killing spree years later in Ipswich in 2006. So this massively broadens the scope of his offending. Experts and his ex-wife warning this new admission could mean there were many more victims in the wider Suffolk area. Professor David Wilson is a criminologist.
Is the opportunity that this must now give to the Norfolk and Suffolk Constabulary to look at other unsolved murders of young women around the time that Wright was active.
Crucially, this is the first time as well that Wright has ever actually admitted to any of the killings. Finally, Victoria's family know what happened to her. He snatched the sixth form student just 300 yards from her home as she returned from a nightclub with friends, one of her friends describing how they heard a high-pitched scream after parting. And 5 days later, Nick, she was found in a ditch 25 miles away. Prosecutors in the court describing how her body showed signs of being strangled, exactly as he would go on to kill the other women. Two of them, we know, were found laid out in a crucifix shape, with his original trial hearing how his murders were premeditated and meticulously planned, targeting mostly sex workers who he picked up in his car in 2006. Professor Wilson's given us his theory on why Wright finally admitted to Victoria's murder.
Steve Wright had an older brother, two younger sisters. Perhaps the reason for him changing his plea at this 11th hour may have been as a consequence of them putting pressure on him. Steve Wright didn't overnight develop a conscience. If he had a conscience, he'd be talking to the police now about other murders he is still suspected of being involved with.
Tragically, Nick, Victoria's mother, Lorinda Hall, died last year before he could be brought to justice, but he will now finally be sentenced for her daughter's murder on Friday.
LBC's Joseph Draper reporting, 7:30. Coming up after the news, which dragon is close to buying retail chain American Golf? Which would get them around 80 stores and outrage over a scheme as where to put asylum seekers. What about brand new council houses in a town or city near you? Yes, you did hear that correctly. Building council homes for asylum seekers. Leader of Reform UK in Portsmouth, Councillor George Madgwick, has campaigned against this.
I think they should be in a facility, like a detention facility, that is secure, not only for them, but for the people on the outside, where their application can be processed in a sensible, logical way.
You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Just on 7:31 now. News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Police are reviewing allegations that Lord Mandelson passed sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein when he was in government. Documents appear to show he sent on emails while he was business secretary in 2009. A review's found there were several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. Mohammed Umar Khan murdered 15-year-old Harvey Wilgoose last February. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. Charities have welcomed the £10 million funding and say it'll help remove barriers to treatment. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most, hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
we talk about Peter Mandelson. Will he face criminal sanction for his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein? And on Jeffrey Epstein, how could it be that his tentacles ran so deep all across the world?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Signature, our award-winning care homes are where luxury, comfort and peace of mind come together. With locations across London and the Home Counties, we offer exceptional residential, nursing and dementia care within five-star surroundings that feature a wealth of amenities, including our new wellness studios. To find out how you can receive an exclusive £1,000 discount with our new inclusive pricing, book a visit now at signaturecarehomes.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning your next train journey? Buy it on the South Western Railway app. It's the same ticket, but with a whole bunch of benefits. Pay no booking fees, get live departure updates, and see how busy your South Western Railway train is. Plus, you can book train tickets to anywhere in the UK.
Everything you need, all in your pocket. Get app and go. Download the SWR app today. Geographic exclusions apply. For full T's and C's, visit southwesternrailway.com/app.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Our pet's in a pickle. We know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34. Well, there's much to discuss in the world of business, not least, of course, the allegations of these emails that have been passed on concerning some pretty high-level government business. Let's get the background on that and any fallout from Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. Right, what are the big business beasts saying about this? Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, like a lot of journalists, I spent much of my day yesterday trawling through these thousands of emails of correspondence between Peter Mandelson and Jeffrey Epstein, the latest release from the US Department of Justice. And what do you get when you do that? You get a sense of just how close the two men were over many, many years. You get a sense that Peter Mandelson would confide and seek advice from Jeffrey Epstein on all areas of his personal and professional life for years. Some of it is a bit seedy, some of it's a bit gossipy, some of it is exceptionally high stakes. The reason that the police are now looking at some of these revelations relates to his time as business secretary in Gordon Brown's government. There are three particular incidents that appear to be outlined in email exchanges that some experts say could constitute the unlawful release of market-sensitive information. We are referring to, on one occasion, the forwarding of an email that was sent to Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, by an advisor, forwarded by Peter Mandelson straight to Jeffrey Epstein saying, look, this is interesting. And what were they referring to? They were referring to a very sensitive plan to possibly sell British public assets in order to bring down government debt. Also, conversations around potential future tax changes. Remember, Jeffrey Epstein was a financier and he advised exceptionally wealthy people all over the world. On another instance, it would appear that Jeffrey Epstein emailed Mandelson saying, my sources are telling me there's going to be a 500 billion eurozone bailout. To which Peter Mandelson appears to have replied, it will be announced later. That could constitute, on the surface at least, Nick, an advanced notice to an American financier from the heart of Downing Street about an unbelievably market-sensitive intervention. There are other such cases. We also found some interesting lines in the emails at City AM yesterday of Peter Mandelson boasting that he'd been offered a $1 million advisory contract with the Deutsche Bank, the German investment bank. It's not clear if that arrangement ever came off, but he was boasting about it over email to Peter Mandelson. To Jeffrey Epstein, who said, good work, to which Peter Mandelson said, is that all you've got to say? And Jeffrey Epstein replies, good job, Petey. Well done, Petey. Now aim higher. Let's get some more of these. So there was another instance where Peter Mandelson was congratulating Jeffrey Epstein on what appears to be an acquisition or an investment in a Greek company. Peter Mandelson then emails Epstein and says, do you need a lord for the board? So you get a sense, quite a detailed sense of how much Peter Mandelson's personal, professional and business interests were woven around Jeffrey Epstein.
And I tell you what I take from this, and it's somebody who I interviewed and I always quite admired, and I admire him even more. Sadly, he's no longer with us. Alistair Darling, the former Chancellor, who was pretty strong through it all, wasn't he, Christian? Probably someone you knew, I imagine you knew well.
Yes, he is very fondly remembered with a huge amount of respect. You have to remember the context of a lot of these emails that people are now looking at, these allegations of leaking information straight from the heart of Downing Street. This was at the most turbulent time, the most extraordinary fallout in British economic history from the financial crisis. The stakes were unbelievably high, and people in Downing Street around that time, Gordon Brown, Alistair Darling and the advisers, refer to now this what appears to be an unforgivable breach of trust at the heart of their operation, because Peter Mandelson was intimately involved in those conversations, and there was a mindset and a mentality in Number 10 at the time, and the Treasury at the time, that this really was a tight-knit group of people trying their best under most extraordinary circumstances. And it now appears that there was somebody in their midst who was simply keeping somebody outside the loop very closely informed.
Right, only got time for one more. Let's talk about the Dragon. Who's taking over, or who's moving onto the golf course, who's one an original Dragon?
Well, you say that's right. He is an original dragon. Peter Jones, I think, is the only dragon on the lineup remaining on the show from the first episode, which must be going for about 20 years now. He is now close to acquiring American Golf, Sky News reported late last night. American Golf, big retailer, about 80 stores, hundreds of staff. Peter Jones is, we understand, a prolific golfer himself. He often features in the Alfred Dunhill Championship, the Pro-Am professional amateur tournament. So he is inching towards teeing off with that deal. American Golf has been owned by private equity for some time. As I say, about 80 stores now, one of these high-end golf retailers that Peter Jones, the original dragon, is hoping to get in the bag. He didn't comment to Sky News last night, but we'll keep an eye on that possible acquisition today.
Let's see if he gets us a hole in one. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, thanks for that. 7:39, let's get your calls back in. We're talking about which lord or lady should go first, Baroness Moon or, of course, Lord Mandelson. In a perfect world, they will both be gone. But also, we'll move towards how we would reform the so-called upper chamber. Helen, in Watford, you're on the radio. Your views, Helen. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I mean, it's a really interesting one, but you touched on this a little bit earlier. I think we do need a house that is representative of people who really understand what goes on in the country. So we don't need 850. I think maybe around 100 represent medicine, finance. They law. Represent the roads. Yeah. Yeah. They represent law. They represent religion. I think having a representative there as well.
Good idea.
And they can be elected by, for example, the GMC can represent medicine. And ordinary people can also make their recommendations. You know, Vic, I know, who knows the roads better than anyone. He's somebody who knows them inside out. So we then represent it. And there's two things I would also say. There should be no money for this. It should be something that people do, likely at the end of their career. So no 30-year-olds going in, but they've got something to add, and they're basically doing it because they want to give back to society. And there should be zero tolerance for any of the kind of behaviours that you've been talking about this morning.
I think if we do that, we
can make it work.
Helen, I would just say they should get expenses. If we've got a lord or a lady living down in the West Country or up in Scotland, I don't think they should necessarily have to shout their rail fare, but I agree they shouldn't get 371 quid just for passing through the front door.
I agree with that. And anything which is suggesting that when they're doing those expenses, they're doing them and they look excessive, again, there should be zero tolerance for that. When you've got a small house of, let's say, 100 people, you will have the people who will, when we say you get your train fare from the southwest, they just pick up their train fare from the southwest. They don't add on to that the extra things that make it. And I don't think it is it really so unrealistic that in a country of however many, 60, 70 million, for us to be able to find 100 people who can really help us in that way. I think it's entirely realistic.
And let me, lastly, I really like the way you've outlined, and you've had such a cogent argument. If we do want to catch up with modern times, 2026, to have something I would say as unwieldy and as undemocratic as the House of Lords, I don't think it speaks well for Great Britain.
No, I'd agree with that. And unfortunately, hereditary peers, which have started, but they have also got to go. Who your dad is should not be any kind of registration for being part of this group. It should be something that people feel incredibly proud of. The pomp, the ceremony around it, I think is something we should be proud of.
Helen, really enjoyed our conversation. Only moving on to get other stories, but thank you very much. Have yourself a safe day. We'll carry on with Helen's conversation the next hour. I can't imagine many of you are going to stake a case. We must keep the House of Lords exactly as it is. But I do think we need it to be referred to as an upper chamber or an upper house or a reviewing body. I don't care what you call it. So how do we reform, that's with a small r, how do we reform the House of Lords? That's coming up later in the show. 7:42 now to news you've already heard here on LBC News Bulletin. Resident or one-time junior doctors have voted to keep striking for another 6 months as they chase an increased pay rise. British Medical Association, BMA, members have extended their mandate until July, which takes the fight into its fourth year. Junior or resident doctors have already been on a strike of a total of 59 days since 2023. Now, you may recall, more recently, November last year, resident doctors went on a five-day strike as part of this ongoing dispute. And on the first day of those strikes, Health Secretary Wes Streeting was in the studio here for Call the Cameron on LBC. Responding to a call from resident doctor Jonathan in Harrow, Mr. Streeting criticised the decision to take industrial action.
when you say, I don't want to be out on strike today, yes, you do, because you have made that choice. You have done so having had a 28.9% pay rise, the highest in the public sector 2 years in a row. And on those things that you've just mentioned, you say they take time. Yes, they do, because it is complicated. So to hold patients to ransom and to be out on strike setting back the NHS because you don't think we're going fast enough and because the leadership of your union are not honest enough that some of this change takes time is extremely irresponsible.
Let's bring Dr. Thomas Chelliotis James, Deputy Chair of the BMA Resident Doctors Committee, into the conversation. Doctor, can you remind the listeners what it is that you and your colleagues are campaigning for? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, so this dispute is about jobs and pay. We're in the ridiculous situation where we're turning away tens of thousands of fully trained doctors from working in the NHS, and we're in a position where we're facing down real terms pay cuts yet again after the best part of 10 years since 2021.
So if they were to remedy the turning doctors away, which I think many of my listeners have huge concerns, you would be able to drop your pay claim?
So these two issues come hand in hand. We know that people are leaving the UK because of better prospects abroad.
You just said there are tens of thousands of doctors. Surely they would take the jobs?
Yes, of course.
So not that we want to see anybody go. So if we can solve the job side of this equation, we can forget the money, because I would point out, of course, you and your colleagues have had a 29% increase in the last 3 years.
And that is still a fifth down from where we were in 2008, and after 10 years of pay.
Well, many people weren't even doctors in 2008, Doctor.
Yeah. But what we really want to see is a long-term sustainable solution to this, where members can be assured they're not going to be faced with real terms pay cuts, where they're not going to face further employment down the road. And that's what we're currently doing in discussions, trying to come with an appropriate long-term solution for this. Just to go out on strike.
Do you sense even your own members are getting rather tired of this? The turnout in January 2023 was 77.5%. Later that year, 71.3%. 2024, 61.9%. Last year, 55.3%. This year, 52.5%. Even your own members are getting tired of this, Doctor.
So what we have seen is more than 26,000 doctors voting in favour of this industrial action.
52.5%, Doctor.
There's a huge amount of anxiety and fear about not being able to get into training.
Why is there been a 50% drop-off of those who take part in your ballots?
So there are very strict trade union laws in this country that relate to rotational training.
That's nothing to do with why doctors aren't voting in the... Why has there been a 50% drop-off in those few years?
So that's part of the reason. Another part of the reason is that...
they're bored stiff with it, aren't they?
The introduction of this UK Graduate Prioritisation Bill, which has...
I mean, you only just got over the threshold, didn't you? The threshold is, of course, 50%. You just got over. How embarrassing would that have been? Even your own members are now so tired of this charade, they don't even want to vote for it.
I don't accept that at all, Nick. What I hear when I speak to members is that they are fearing for their jobs, they're fearing for pay erosion, and they want this to come to an end with a sustainable deal that works for all
parties. You haven't explained why fewer are voting.
I have. I've already explained two reasons, one of which was the UK Graduate Prioritisation Bill, which was... delivered for some members but not for others, and also the nature of the postal ballot, which will not be an issue going forward after spring, we hope.
Well, I hope there is a resolution, because you are a fantastic body of men and women. You're literally making life-saving decisions every second of every hour of every day. Coming up after the news on what's called the government round, Doctor, is a ministry for second care at the Department of Health. She'll be joining me right after this. What's your message to her? What does she and her senior colleagues need to do?
They need to continue to work with us in the spirit they have after Christmas, and come to the table as they have been, and engage and come up with a long-term solution that works for my members. That's what we want, and we want to see an end to this dispute. But this mandate shows that our members are willing to take further action if needed, which we sincerely hope it is not.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. And we all want a resolution of it. Dr. Thomas Chelliotis James is Deputy Chair of the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee. At 7:47, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Metropolitan Police says it's reviewing claims that Lord Mandelson leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. The reviews found there were missed opportunities to address the behaviour of a schoolboy who went on to murder a fellow pupil in Sheffield.
and families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most, hill snow for parts of Wales and the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the motorways this morning. Traffic is being held on the Hertfordshire stretch of the M25 clockwise, just after junction 23 at South Mimms, and that's following an accident. Also delays on the M20 westbound from junction 4 at Leybourne to Rootham at junction 2. It's following an accident, but all the lanes are back open, but it's still long queues. And also delays on the M2 westbound up to junction 5 at Sittingbourne. There's been an accident and it's extremely busy. Eastbound is open, but slow because of onlookers. Also delays on the M1 southbound junction 10 at Luton Airport. That's all down to an accident. One lane is closed if you're heading that way to the airport to allow yourself extra time.
This is LBC.
Ah, Benny's parents. Thanks for coming.
Hiya.
So, Benny has really blossomed this term.
You're telling me? He outgrew his bike. We sold it on eBay.
Oh, that's not quite what I meant.
It's free to sell on there.
Free to sell?
Easy too. Sold Benny's bike, your guitar, my jacket.
You sold my guitar?
Shall we talk about Benny?
When it's this easy to sell for free, you can't help but say when it's eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today. All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fools governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8 minutes before eight, we'll come back. We're going to move the conversation on to a potential attempt to reform the House. That's with a small r, by the way, a reform of the House of Lords. We'll take more calls on that. Mohammed, coming to you in a moment. Have I said 8 minutes before eight now? The impact of cancer. I still remember all these years on being told that my late father had cancer, and that resonated around me, as you can imagine. So being told that one of your children has cancer, I cannot comprehend. And if that's happened to you, or it's just happened to you, my heart goes out to you because it must just be devastating. Well, the government is determined where it can to try and assist people with that challenge. And here with more details is Labour MP, Minister for Secondary Care at the Department of Health. Thank you for coming on, Karen Smith. Thank you for coming on, Minister. What is it that you hope to provide for these folks? Morning.
Morning. So you're right. I mean, I'm someone who's had one of those cancer diagnoses for my own melanoma, and you're right, to cope for yourself, but to for your children. I think we've all know friends and family who've been in that situation. And working with cancer charities that particularly focus on children and young people and the cancer that their task force, we wanted to support them the best way we can. And the thing that they asked for was support with travel costs. There are 13 specialist centres across the country, really good specialist centres where they get the best care.
So this would be like Great Ormond Street and Alderhay, presumably.
And others, yes. Yeah. And it does mean that people travel. So, you know, we spoke with a woman called Emma Wilding, a five-month-old child, Theo. She talked about the extra 45 minutes travel she's got and the difference that that support would have made. But she also talked about the people she was being treated with Theo, were coming from much further. So these families working together, of course, they're very altruistic because they're sharing that terrible experience, really want that extra support so they don't have that extra burden of worry about how they pay for things. So really pleased to be able to announce this £10 million today to support these families through this really difficult time.
Fantastic. Well done. Great news. How do people apply, Minister?
So when they're going through, when they get that diagnosis and they go through to their centre, it'll be part of that overall assessment about what they need. So some of those details will be worked out with the different centres because different people do it in different ways. But essentially, when you get that diagnosis and you go through to the centre, the conversation that they will be having is about the wider needs, not just the very specialist treatment they need, but the wider support needs, and it'll be part of that conversation.
Is it capped and is it means tested?
It's not means tested, and that's a really important point because it means that we can get to everybody more rapidly and take out that extra step of filling out more forms and means tested. We estimate the £10 million will cover that. It's about 1,900 families, so that's what the estimates of that. That well, obviously some families travel less far than others, so it'll be variable. So we'll keep that heavily under review with all those centres.
And when does it start?
So we'll be starting by 2027. The exact date.
2027, Minister. Why so long?
As my understanding is that when we can get everything set up in place to come forward with making sure that it works for people.
What takes so long, Minister? I appreciate it can't be done this afternoon, but surely it could be done in a couple of months.
Bringing forward, I mean, we will bring forward as soon as possible. I don't have...
That's 2 years away, Minister.
Oh, well, no, it's not. It's next year, isn't it?
Sorry,
we go through into the financial year starting in a couple of months' time. So by then, we will have everything in place to make that work. And obviously, we bring forward
it more...
I'm just
thinking of parents listening now. You make the point, quite rightly, you know, that some of these poor folk, they're travelling probably maybe hundreds of miles, certainly north of 100 miles. And you just think we want to get help to them as soon as we possibly can, Minister.
Yes, so it's in the next, to be clear, it's in the next financial year bringing that forward to make sure that we've got everything in place to make that happen, and we are already close to that date.
Well, look, that's good news. What's bad news, as I'm sure within your department, as your colleagues are saying, is the possibility that resident or once junior doctors could be threatening strikes until the summer. I've just been speaking with the deputy chair of the BMA Residents Doctors Committee, Dr. Thomas Chelyotis James. He had this message for you and your colleagues.
They need to continue to work with us in the spirit they have after Christmas and come to the table as they have been and engage and come up with a long-term solution that works for my members. That's what we want, and we want to see an end to this dispute. But this mandate shows that our members are willing to take further action if needed, which we sincerely hope it is not.
As a health minister, how do you respond to that doctor's suggestion?
Well, I'm pleased that they are recognising that there's constructive discussions, which they have been since the new year, and that we are in daily discussions with them, particularly as we've always said, we can't meet all those demands that they have on their particular pay for this year. But what we have always said is that some of the issues around rotas, around career progression, around how they're treated in some hospitals is unacceptable, and we want to change that. And we brought forward legislation last week, emergency legislation, to deal with some of the issues around career progression and making sure that there are more positions available for them, a bit more certainty for them. We're also working with all the trusts to have better conditions in each hospital. Some places are really shocking about how people are treated, and we're taking strong action with NHS England on that. So I'm pleased to hear, I didn't hear that interview earlier, but I'm pleased to hear that it is more constructive. I would agree, and we want to see an end. They now have have a mandate, that's true, but we hope that we can resolve this before that mandate they need to take any further action.
Last couple of minutes together, we've got to move to a conversation concerning Lord Mandelson. Should any investigation by the Cabinet Secretary into Mandelson look into what Pat McFadden and David Lammy knew, given they were both serving ministers under Lord Mandelson in his post at business?
Well, the Prime Minister has asked the Cabinet Secretary to look into those particular emails that we learned about yesterday. So I think we have to let the Cabinet Secretary do that work.
But Mr. McFadden,
this is all new.
Mr. McFadden, Mr. Lammy, they might have relevant information. Surely they should be involved.
Well, the Cabinet Secretary will be looking at whatever needs to be looked at from that period of time. And you wouldn't expect me to speculate further on that at this particular time. This is obviously unfolding within every half hour is a new shocking revelation about that period of time. I think we're all shocked about the revelations in those emails, and it is right that the Prime Minister took action to make sure the Cabinet Secretary does investigate that at the time. And some very serious allegations and emails that we've seen revealed just yesterday.
Minister, was Lord Mandelson given a severance payment after leaving his role as US ambassador?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay. Can I remind you of this one then? In 2024, the Labour manifesto talked about action to modernise the House of Lords. Labour committed to replacing the House of Lords, I quote, committed to replacing the House of Lords with an alternative second chamber, more representative of the regions and nations. Is that still the policy? If so, what's taking so long?
Well, that is our manifesto commitment, and in our first year, we've had a lot of legislation on the major priorities. A lot of that legislation has taken a long time, in large part because it's been in the Lords for a long time. So, yes, that is our position on this particular issue. The Prime Minister has written to all the parties to try and see if we can have cross-party agreement about. This is very damaging for the reputation of the House of Lords and indeed politics. So taking action on that is part of that.
It's no longer fit for purpose, is it?
Well, that is our manifesto commitment to look at changes to the House of Lords. That's very clear.
Lastly, there seems to be a growing revolt among some of your colleagues, one of whom is Graham Stringer, your colleague up in Blackley in Middleton South, over this idea of local authorities, local councils, building council homes for asylum seekers. I'm sure you're aware of this. It gained a lot of publicity yesterday. Are you supportive of that policy?
I'm actually been very steeped. I know you won't like this answer, but I've been very steeped in the cancer work this week and supporting young people in sunbeds and so on.
Let me briefly tell you, around 200 local authorities have registered interest in a government pilot scheme that would fund the building of homes or refurbishing derelict sites for asylum seekers. Places such as Brighton and Hove, Peterborough, Thanet, Powys and Hackney have all indicated their intent. Graham Stringer and some other of your friends say this is appalling. Council houses should not be provided to asylum seekers. They should go to local people. Is he right?
Well, I'd want to see council houses go to local people in my constituency. Housing is one of my biggest issues too. But the Home Secretary and the government more widely does have to manage this shocking process that we have inherited. We want to close those hotels. We need to be able to move people who shouldn't be here back to safe countries. So as part of all of that, I think it's important the government looks carefully at the options, because we do want to close these hotels. They're incredibly expensive on the taxpayer and not suitable. We're obviously reducing the timing process and taking action more broadly. So the government does need to look at everything in the round to make sure that works and works for local communities.
Grateful for your time. A £10 million package of support to parents who have children or a child with cancer, as announced there by Minister for Secondary Care at the Department of Health, Karen Smith. Minister, thank you for your time. You've taken us to 1 minute after 8. Let's get the LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Scotland Yard says it is reviewing allegations that Lord Mandelson passed sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein. Files appear to show he sent on Downing Street emails while he was minister in Gordon Brown's government. Former Labour special adviser Baroness McLeod has told LBC the latest revelations are shocking.
Things were very fraught then. The economy was in a very precarious position. The government was fighting to keep the economy afloat. And to think that one of your colleagues was walking out the door and sending copies of your confidential conversation to somebody in another country who could move the markets just is unspeakable.
Lord Mandelson says none of the recent Epstein files indicate wrongdoing or misdemeanour on his part. The government minister, Karen Smith, has just told Nick that Keir Starmer is taking action into the claims.
This is obviously unfolding within every half hour is a new shocking revelation about that period of time. I think we're all shocked about the revelations in those emails, and it is right that the Prime Minister took action to make sure the Cabinet Secretary does investigate that at the time. It's some very serious allegations and emails that we've seen revealed just yesterday.
Separately, Bill and Hillary Clinton say they will testify in the US House investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. The decision suspends a vote by American lawmakers on whether to hold the couple in contempt for previously refusing to appear. In a statement, they say they look forward to setting a precedent for everyone. In other news this morning, a review has found there were several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. Mohammed Umar Khan murdered 15-year-old Harvey Wilgoose last February. The trust that runs the school says it's fully implemented the recommendations. The government is to cover the travel costs of children and young people in England who have cancer. Families often have to spend large amounts of money travelling to and from appointments and treatment. The plans will be rolled out next year. And peers in the House of Lords are to debate on whether to introduce an outright ban on smartphones in schools. Government guidelines currently say schools should be mobile-free environments, but some headteachers have called for it to become law. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 10,275. It closed up 51 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.16. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Some hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies in a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 5 minutes after eight on Tuesday, February the 3rd, coming up in this hour. Enough of the upper chamber, but with what would it be replaced as we have disgraced people in there? And some, of course, possibly are facing fresh disgrace. In other news, fury's growing within Labour ranks. Another U-turn on the way? The idea that local authorities could bid for money to build council housing that would then go to asylum seekers. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood spoke with you last week exclusively, called the Cabinet here on LBC about finding a solution to the problem.
There is no one silver bullet. I wish that there were that I could implement and make these problems go away overnight. We do need a solution for housing asylum seekers.
In other news...
On the anniversary of the murder of a teenager, a report found multiple missed safeguarding opportunities at his school. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
The accusations from former Prime Minister David, now Lord Cameron, that spiteful Labour, his words not mine, are killing off state schools or academy schools. If you have a child or children, have you noticed with this, 18 months or so of the Labour administration, that the schools have slipped? Or, are you going to tell me, they've actually improved? And in other news, let's take to the roads.
Councils, including Buckinghamshire, are using dashcam footage to fine littering drivers. But would you rat on your neighbours? I'm LBC Shivani Sharma in Milton Keynes, finding out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question, what do you call a place where convicted criminals, having served their time, can turn up and get £371 for their trouble, and other people facing possible criminal investigation, thus possible criminal conviction, can just decide not to turn up? They don't need to be present. Effectively, just take off. I just won't be coming into work for a few weeks, months, years. That's what you call the House of Lords. Now, one, and I said in the first hour, there is an undoubted need for some kind of upper chamber, reviewing platform, whatever it might be. And there is a wealth of experience, and I've been in this job for so long, it's hardly surprising that I have met some lords and some ladies, and I point you to people such as Lord Winston in the field of medicine, Lord Stevens, brackets, someone I know and is a friend, close brackets, in the field of policing. These folk have, and there are many former judges as well, and indeed, I'm so sorry, I've been rude, and the former archbishops. These people have enormous wealth of experience in policing, in religion, in law, whatever it might be. But as you remember, if you were listening in the first hour, we had the sack race, the Nick Ferrari sack race. Who should go first? Baroness Mohn, still in the upper chamber. Remember the scandal over PP MedPro, owes the country about 150 million quid. And Lord Mandelson, of course, the allegations, I stress that word, that he passed sensitive material to the paedophile and his chum, Jeffrey Epstein. But the latter of those two was addressed in the House of Commons yesterday by Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones.
Peter Mandelson must account for his actions and conduct. It is an understatement, Madam Deputy Speaker, to say that his decision to continue a close relationship with a convicted paedophile, including discussing private government business, falls far below the standards expected of any minister.
MPs of all parties joined in the chorus of disapproval, starting with the Conservative Alex Burkhardt.
Theirs was a relationship built not just on affection, but on the transfer of money from Epstein to Mandelson's family and the transfer of information from Mandelson to Epstein. In some cases, this was apparently market-sensitive information.
Does he agree with myself that Peter Mandelson should be subject to a police investigation for potential criminality whilst in public office?
Isn't it time to end the Lord Mandelson charade once and for all by bringing legislation to this House to strip him of his peerage?
Surely this is not a matter of whether Peter Mandelson be in the House of Lords. This is a matter of whether the police should be involved.
Appointing Peter Mandelson to our Premier Ambassadorship was always a grotesque error of judgment by the Prime Minister, given everything that we knew about this man.
You heard from the Conservative Alex Burkhardt, SNP's Stephen Flynn, the Lib Dem Max Wilkinson, Labour's Emily Thornberry and Reform's Robert Jenrick. Now, before the news, I was joined by the Secondary Care Minister, Karen Smith, and I reminded her of Labour's manifesto promise, unequivocal, to replace the House of Lords.
Well, that is our manifesto commitment, and in our first year, we've had a lot of legislation on the major priorities. A lot of that legislation has taken a long time, in large part because it's been in the Lords for a long time. So, yes, that is our position on this particular issue. The Prime Minister has written to all the parties to try and see if we can have cross-party agreement about. This is very damaging for the reputation of the House of Lords and indeed politics. So taking action on that is part of that.
It's no longer fit for purpose, is it?
Well, that is our manifesto commitment to look at changes to the House of Lords. That's very clear.
Let's bring into the conversation Dr. Craig Prescott, who's constitutional expert and lecturer at the Royal Holloway, University of London. Doctor, I have to confess, I'm going back in my history here. Do we go back to about the 14th century or 1400s or something, when we first sort of set up the House of Lords? Remind me how it all began and how it was originally envisaged. Morning to you, Doctor.
Good morning. Good to join you. Yes, in essence, the House of Lords emerged as the church and the landed aristocracy met in one chamber in Westminster, and the Commons elected in various ways, met in another chamber, and we ended up with the two-chamber system that we have today, the House of Lords, clue is in the name, again, the House of Commons, and the clue is in the name there, that sort of the Commons were elected, the Lords weren't, they were sort of in receipt of a peerage, possibly because of service to the Crown in one way, shape or form, along with the established church. And, you know, we've sort of titivated and amended that system over the centuries since.
If you agree that it's perhaps a little outdated now, but we do need some kind of reviewing chamber, I think is the expression I've used for, how would you reconstitute the House of Lords?
I think you've hit the nail on the head in some ways, that there's a sense that the House of Lords does good work in terms of reviewing legislation. It has the expertise. But we've ended up with that in a very haphazard, ad hoc way, that we most of those come from appointed life peers, not so much the hereditaries, and they're on the way out as well. What I would do, I would separate the peerage from being a member of the House of Lords. And we've got a confusion here because the peerage is both an honour and a right to sit in the House of Lords. And some people want the peerage, but without the obligation to sit in the House of Lords. And so I would separate the two totally. And, you know, so then you appoint people for their expertise to sit in, you might call it a Senate, you could call it the reviewing chamber, whatever you want. But I would separate the peerage and sort of doing the good stuff that the House of Lords does.
Lastly, Doctor, you mentioned the Senate, and my final question was going to be, if we look around the rest of the world, if we look across the United States, or we look into Europe, we look at, I don't know, France or Italy, is there anything we can learn?
There's lots we can learn from other chambers. You know, some actually have elections to their second chamber. Not necessarily an appetite for that here, but other chambers like Canada, they have a wholly appointed house, and so maybe we could look at our close cousins across the Atlantic.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you very much, Dr. Craig Prescott, constitutional expert and lecturer at the Royal Holloway University of London. I'm going to suggest his students are very lucky individuals because he's in very, very, very genned up and a great way of putting his points across. Doctor, thank you. 14 after 8. Let's turn now to Guardian columnist, author and broadcaster and friend Polly Toynbee. Good to have you on, Polly. It's been too long. It's outdated. It needs reform, but how should it be reformed? Is that a fair observation, Polly? Morning.
Absolutely. Good morning. Absolutely. I think everybody thinks it needs reform. The trouble is everybody has different ideas of what should replace it. And that's what's always stymied it in the past. Going right back to 1911, there have been attempts to reform the absurdity of the House of Lords. But we've ended up with ridiculous situations where at one point it was a combination of, on the right, Enoch Powell wanting to keep it as it was, and Tony Benn wanting a very radical reform, joining together to prevent the reform that was on offer. And that keeps happening. I think what we need to do is to hurry to make quick reforms now, and then to have something like a royal commission to discuss in the long run. But straight away, we can do things like remove the absurdities. I mean, anyone who doesn't turn up to vote regularly, doesn't treat it as a proper job, should be out. The 26 bishops is ridiculous. The hereditaries are going anyway. It should certainly reform the way it operates, because at the moment it has no guillotine. They can talk as long as they want. That means that a handful of peers can talk out any bill that comes in. It's happening at the moment for the Dignity in Dying Bill, Assisted Dying Bill.
Yes.
They can talk as long as they want to prevent there being a vote. Because if there was a vote of the Lords, I think it would pass. Everybody seems to think it would pass. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is blocking having a vote at all, so it gets thrown out. I mean, that's disgraceful. And there are a lot of things about the way they behave and how they conduct themselves, which they could reform themselves but haven't, that could be done quite quickly without the agonising process of what kind of second chamber do you want, who should elect it. I think a sensible idea might be that the second chamber is made up of people elected elsewhere. It's a regional. You might have the mayors, much smaller. You might have the mayors, you might have the leaders of councils, you might have various people from around the country to make it regionally spread, because at the moment it's almost entirely London-based. And you might also have certain ex officio people, but that's a more complicated discussion. I think probably not directly elected, because that leaves you into the sort of the kind of stuck situation of the two houses in the United States, which is...
I will leave it there. Polly Toynbee, thank you. Guardian columnist, author and broadcaster. Well, everyone... Sorry, both Polly and my doctor, the Dr. Prescott, and I, all three of us agree that reform is needed, but what does that reform look like? We'll take your calls and your views. I doubt anyone's going to say keep it as it is. Also coming up after the news, another U-turn on the way. The idea of building council houses for asylum seekers. That's the latest whiz-bang Labour plan. We'll look at that in more detail. It's 17 after 8. LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Scotland Yard is reviewing allegations that Lord Mandelson leaked sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein.
A review's found several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most, hill snow for parts of Wales, eastern Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M1 southbound junction 10 at Luton Airport, and that was after an accident. On the M25 clockwise, all the lanes are back open now, just before junction 24 at Porter's Bar, but there are delays back to junction 22 at Lunson Coney. It's also having a knock-on effect to the A1M as well, which is slow southbound from junction 2. Severe delays on the M2 westbound to junction 5 at Sittingbourne after an accident, and also the delays on the M4 do continue eastbound to junction 5 at Langley, and that's where a car's broken down. No Woolwich Ferry running, that's because of the high tide. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line and minor delays on the Circle and minor delays as well on the Mild May line.
This is LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, yet another disgrace for the so-called upper chamber, which has not got that many, but there are people who've committed some fairly serious offences, including sexual offences and others, who have sat there or have now retired. So surely some reform is needed. Mohammed in Cardiff, you've hung on the line. I do appreciate it, sir. How would you redo it? Your concerns here. Good morning.
Hello, good morning. All I'll say is that many years ago, I was forced to read a book by George Orwell called Animal Farm. not a very educated man myself, but one sentence sticks out in my head is, all animals are equal. And in particular, it came out with, yes, all pigs are equal,
yes,
except us.
Yes.
So the only way I would say reform it very quickly, very cheaply, is stick that on a plaque on the wall so they can read it themselves and for others and remind themselves of which side of the fence they're on when they read a book or something that was written many, many, many years ago. And it just rings in my head now that we're at where we are now, that rings true. I just can't believe that I was forced to read it, and I just can't believe that I'm listening to the reading now.
I was forced to read books at school, but in fact now I'm very grateful that my teachers were so strict.
Exactly.
We've learned from it. Just lastly, in the previous hour, we were obviously talking about Baroness Mona, and we were talking about Lord Mandelson. It's just not fit for modern times, the way it's currently put together, is it, the House of Lords, Mohammed?
It's absolutely not. And some of your previous comments, which was elect people from the public sector to work in there, and absolutely zero tolerance. So listen, I work in it. I've worked before. And if I took a couple of pens and a couple of stationery and passed off a couple of little secrets of where I was working before, I'd be out of my ear. Yep. No questions asked. And, you know, I mean, maybe if you're facing other charges as well. But these guys can just walk around and go, do you know what? It doesn't affect us. And they're still keeping a large sum of cash and money and whatever.
Well, £150 million in Baroness Brass. A position, and she can elect not to go to effectively go to work, not go to the House of Lords. I'm taking leave of absence. Dear God, if you're an investigation under any other job, in any other job, you've been nicking the stationery. I'm going to take a leave of absence, actually, if that's all right. Well, hang on, you've made off with a filing cabinet. Mohammed, thank you. More calls coming in. Sid Harf, stay there. Come to you in a moment. But there is a story I've mentioned already, which, and as I've told you many times, I always go home. It makes everybody laugh. There's always a pile of newspapers under my arm. There is a reason for that, because as I read them on the way home, and I hadn't seen this extraordinary story about a government plan to put asylum seekers in new council homes. Around 200 local authorities have registered what's called interest in a pilot scheme that would fund the building of new homes or refurbishment of derelict sites for asylum seekers. Well, one person who's cried foul on this is Graham Stringer, Labour MP for Blackley and Middleton South. What is it you're calling for now, Mr. Stringer? Good morning.
Well, a re-look at our priorities. I represent a relatively poor constituency where many people can't get council houses or housing association properties. And it seems to me perverse that these people should be put to the bottom of the list in favour of asylum seekers, many who've come here undocumented via small boats. And they have ripped up their ID before they've got here, and they are maybe the people who were put into these houses. That seems to me wrong. So we should change that priority, and we should also stop people entering this country without documentation who've come over in small boats.
What do we do with them upon arrival or when they get to Dover?
What do we do with them? Well, yes, we certainly don't let them into the country.
No, indeed. So where do they go, Mr. Stringer?
Well, not into this country, basically. Right. We could take them anywhere, to an island off the coast of France, for instance, or the Channel Isles. But we should not allow them into this country and to apply for asylum, because we are at the present time letting people in who we don't know whether they're serial killers, whether drug dealers, whatever we are, and we should stop it.
The government say that they are the inheritance of the Conservatives putting all these people in hotels and the inordinate expense, and that has to be stopped. Is that not at least a fair defence of this potential policy, Mr. Stringer?
No. Whether it's hotels, whether it's campsites that disturb the local population, or whether it's giving these people priority to get into public sector housing, they shouldn't be here. And the real problem is people coming into the country, and we don't know who they are.
Right. But the 900 that arrived in January, if we don't put them in hotel rooms, where do they go?
Well, not into this country. I think there are places, there are islands off the city. They can be put into tents as they are in other parts of the world. I don't think we should just say, yeah, you've arrived illegally because you've not got documents. So we will not let you into the country. And I think one of the factors here, and I think almost everybody agrees with this, is the pull factor of this country, that the people who are smuggling these gangs here and being paid a fortune will say, you can go to Britain, they will put you up in a hotel, and then when you've got here, you'll be able to get full status to stay there forever. And that's going to be made worse. There will be no advertising coming over here by saying, not only will you get into a hotel, you will get a council house. However, likely that is at the time,
yes.
But that will be the advert that they will put out.
Lastly, Mr. on another matter, you've expressed your concerns over Sir Keir Starmer and his stewardship of the party and indeed of the government. You've talked about him being in a last chance saloon. Where does the Lord Mandelson scandal now leave Sir Keir, not least, of course, after his appointment as our ambassador in Washington?
Well, I think that what's happened to Peter Mandelson, or what had not happened to him, what we now know about him, has to be investigated, and if it is appropriate, legal action taken. I have heard on another outlet this morning that people are saying he should be charged with malfeasance. That may be. So I think the normal procedures should go. Keir is in a very difficult situation because this government isn't doing as well as it could have been. Appointing Peter Mandelson was one of many mistakes the government's made. And I think if we do badly in the Gorton and Denton by-election, if we do badly in the local elections, then there will be a reassessment by Labour MPs of how well this government's doing and what we should do about it.
Which I take to mean you might need to change your leader.
That would be one of the possibilities, yeah. I would have preferred, and I've said it a number of times, if the government stopped making mistakes, so they have to do U-turns, and we have a clear programme that people can appreciate and are in line with the electorate's priorities. To go back to the original questions you were asking, mm-hmm. giving asylum seekers who have come here illegally access to council housing should not be a priority. No Labour candidate will put that on their election addresses. And there are a whole series of other issues where there have been U-turns and might be U-turns that clearly are not going down well with the electorate.
Grateful for your time today. Thank you. Graham Stringer, Labour MP for Blackley and Middleton South, 8:29. Let's get one more call in on House of Lords reform. Sidha in King's Cross, thanks for hanging on the line. How would you redo it? Good morning.
Look, I think we live in a democracy. It has to be a democratically elected chamber. I think it should be done on a proportional basis based on the number of votes that each party has gotten. I think parties should be encouraged to make sure there's regional distribution. But,
but where do we get the experts, Sidha? If you'll allow that it's good to have Lord Winston and it's good to have former judges, I'm sorry. Where do we get the experts?
Look, I think we can either encourage the local parties to make sure that their contingent has experts, or we have to make sure that those expertise is hired in as advisors, as consultants. I mean, that's how other people do. But this idea that you have Lords spiritual running around and sort of Lords temporal hanging around is absurd. And also the problem is that we have this huge sort of area of patronage and cronyism that Lord Walney and others who sort of betray Corbyn are awarded with peerages. You have this lady who's, 23-year-old or 26-year-old woman who has been appointed inexplicably by Boris Johnson, and no journalist seems to have uncovered what her brilliance and contribution is. So it's...
Well, we don't know. We'll have to wait and see how, of course, she performs in the House of Lords. Sidha, thank you for that. I have to move on because we're already late to the news, and I want to tell people that coming up later in the show, was this offside when football supremo FIFA boss Gianni Infantino said last month,
virtually no incidents. For the first time in history, also, no Brit was arrested during a World Cup. Imagine.
Which was after a VAR changed to this yesterday on Sky News.
So I offended, the Scots, the Welsh and the Northern Irish. So I need to first apologise to the... I apologise. It was meant to be more of a light-hearted remark.
But no apologies for the English, then. We'll look at that later. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says it'll provide whatever assistance is needed as police review new allegations against Lord Mandelson. Documents appear to show that he forwarded Downing Street emails to Jeffrey Epstein while he was business secretary in 2009. A review has found there were several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. Mohammed Umar Khan murdered 15-year-old Harvey Wilgoose last February. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. Charities have welcomed the £10 million funding and say it'll help remove barriers to treatment. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
There is obviously going to be a question about the Prime Minister's judgment about why he was willing to not engage with finding out the deep links between Mandelson and Epstein before he appointed him as our top man in Washington. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's the fact that Mandelson had these connections with Epstein that meant Mandelson was appointed as the ambassador to the United States. Which would you like to think is worse?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
May your orcas stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Time for reform. That's with a small R. 834 reform of the House of Lords. Peter's in Battersea. How would you do it, Peter? Good morning.
Hello there. Great show, Nick. Oh, first for usual. I'm going to disagree with me, but I think that we should, if people come over on the boats and they come over illegally, which is illegal. I believe that we should build, rather than building houses, we should build prisons.
Ah, I see. Sorry, this is asylum. I'm so sorry. I misread that. Okay, so this is after the interview with Graham Stringer, who suggested we use islands off the French coast and or islands in the Thames and put tents up. Would you support that?
No, no. What we should do is we should build prisons and we put them straight in prison because it's illegal, right? So anybody who does anything illegal in this country, they should go to prison.
But we haven't got enough prisons for our prisoners, Peter.
Well, exactly. So rather than building houses, we should build prisons. So for the illegals, then what we should do is we should get them back on the boat, right? Then somebody who's driving it with diplomatic community drive straight back to France and leave the boat there and leave them up front.
Okay, let's just back up a little. You're right. The problem has to be dealt with. If we build these prisons, where are we going to put them? Because no one will want a prison built alongside them, so there will be local opposition, which will be championed by the local council. And if you have a crew that takes a boat across the channel and you leave the boat, how are the crew going to get back?
Well, you just have like a little speedboat
It's not really going to work, that, is it, when you think about it?
Well, of course it will. I mean, they can come over on the boats. I mean, it's about 20 people can come over on the boats. I'm sure that we can get a nice speedboat to go back again. Look, the thing is, they go inside the prison, and then they go back outside the prison, onto the boat.
Where are we going to put these prisons, Peter? No one's going to want an asylum seeker prison built next door to them, are they?
Well, I mean, we need more prisons anyway.
Right, but this... In some instances, these people have legitimate claim to be in this country.
Well, not if you come over illegally.
But this is almost akin to... The only thing that differentiates this from ICE in the United States is we're not shooting them. Other than that, it's the same sort of approach.
But they've committed an offence by coming over illegally. So what you're saying is that it's okay to be illegal.
But there's no legal route. There's no legal route for them. In some instances.
Well, that's tough, isn't it? Well, there is a legal route. There's the Channel Tunnel.
They're not allowed into the country without visas. That's why the reason they seek to do this from Sudan or whatever it is they can't get a visa, so they're going to try and come in through Dover at the dead of night or whenever.
They're already in a country where they can.
You're obviously very much against this. Lastly, the MP said islands with sort of tents with large marquees. Maybe an island in the Thames or something. How does that grow?
Because that'll cost us thousands and millions and millions.
Hold on, how much do you think it costs to build a prison?
We need prisons anywhere. We're short of prisons.
All right, OK. I think we're going round in circles. Peter, I'm going to file it as an idea. Thank you. Same subject, Jerry in Croydon. The government is now off its trolley. Why are they proposing so-called asylum seekers get council houses built for them while British people have to wait forever? It's time for the government pack up its bags and go. Someone else could surely do better. Richard in Workington, same subject. Richard, your view on that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right, thank you. What do you make
Nick,
of... Go on.
Nick, we just need fences, mate. We don't need prisons.
Fences?
These military places, these disused military places,
mm-hmm.
Why don't we stick 15-foot fences round them all, have them policed, and stick these people in there and keep them there? Don't let them out. Don't let them wander around.
That's Crowborough, though, isn't it? That's what's happening down in Sussex, and it's got the people furious.
Well, we're letting the... There was a meeting in the church once, and there was a police officer stood up and... Somebody said, why can't we curfew these people? Why can't we keep them in at night?
Mm-hmm.
This police officer said, well, we can't because they've done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, surely coming here illegally is breaking the law. And as such, you can then deal with them by locking them up somewhere, wherever it is.
Look, I'm totally with you. The current system isn't working. But I do need to point out that many of these countries, there is no legal route for them to pursue anyway. So there is no legal way to get here. And secondly, I don't know what it says about a country if they get treated like that when they come here, during which I understand often 80% of these people are allowed to stay. So they can...
If they knew that was going to happen to them when they came here, do you not think they would stop coming?
I do. I think we have, absolutely, as Emmanuel Macron said last year, we have to break the allure, the attraction of coming to the UK.
It's like the cane in the headmaster's drawer, isn't it? He didn't have to use it to keep everybody in line. It was the fact that it was there that people behaved. Now, if we've got some censure and we've got some sort of system where if you come to this country, this will happen to you... You will go to Rwanda, you will go wherever, you will go,
No, I hear you.
Do you think I might just say... Well,
yes, but I don't imagine, lastly, you'd want to go down the way of ICE, the organisation in the United States. These are almost ICE-like tactics, aren't they?
Well, not exactly, but we just roll over and...
There has to be an in-between, because it is not working. 900 arrived in January... weather was pretty inclement as well. 900 souls arrived. Fortunately, I don't think there are any drownings, but the attraction, the magnet continues. Richard, thank you. We're also talking about a reform of the House of Lords in the light of the latest allegations concerning Lord Mandelson Beryls in Ararat in Australia. G'day.
Hello, Nick. Your topic interested me enough to get onto Google and find out how many actually rule our country.
Oh,
we have 100 at this point of time. We have 157 seating in our lower house.
Mm-hmm.
What we call probably some of the name at the lower house,
mm-hmm.
And 76 in the review house, which is we call the Senate here.
Right.
So we have half the number in our review house. So then I just Googled your numbers, and you've got 600 in the equivalent of the lower house, and over 800 in the House of Lords, which doesn't seem to... You're pretty overgoverned from the sound of it.
Couldn't agree more. Beryl, do you get to vote for those who sit in the upper house, in the Senate?
Yes. We have to. The elections... Look, I'm not overly... I take an interest in politics, but not the details. But I'm pretty sure we vote for the two houses come elections.
And
yes, we vote for the House. But look, I wouldn't put my house on it.
No,
yes.
Okay. Beryl, how well is the system running down in Oz?
Oh, far, you know, we're... No one's still, well, we find other things, topics to jump up and down about, but basically it seems to be okay. I'm on a pension, I budget, and I'm quite happy with the world,
all right.
Nick. So,
All right. Lastly, what can you remember what led the news tonight on Channel 7 or Channel 10? What's the big story in Australia?
No, I wasn't.
But what's the big story in Australia at the moment? What was, like, everyone talking about yesterday? Which?
I'm 86. I've got a short-term.
You've got a short-term memory. All right, I'll look it up myself. Don't worry, I'll look up the Australian front page. Beryl, be well. Talk again soon. Have a good one. 8:42 back here in London. Michael's in Mile End to talk about the asylum process. Building council houses solely for asylum seekers. Your reaction to that? Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? Good morning.
Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I know I've only got a few minutes, but one of your callers called in just now, and I was, you know, to say the least, I was a little bit appalled at some of the things he was saying, you know, and I'd like to ask that gentleman if he actually knows his history. You know, if everybody treated everybody that way, you know, the British wouldn't be in other countries like Africa, you know, where Africans are struggling today because of the fact that every time they get a foothold, somebody somewhere says, go down there and take them down. You know,
which country in Africa is that?
Well, there's loads of countries in Africa, you know.
Which country is that you said they get a foothold and then... you said somebody comes along and takes them down. Which country are we talking about?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to talk, my parents are both from Nigeria.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to go into Nigerian history because, you know, at the end of the day, I know my history and I know a lot of things.
But you said that African countries start to do well and then they get taken down. I'm only asking which country you're talking about, Michael.
Well, there's various. I mean, Nigeria's one. You know, you've got Burkina Faso who are trying to get a foothold. You know, and you've got certain leaders, and I'm not going to name them.
Yeah, but
you know,
that's not the West, is it?
How
is the West involved in what's happening, and some of them are horrific events in Nigeria. How's the West involved in that now?
Listen, let's not try and teach our grannies to suck eggs, you understand? You know, a lot of us, you know, it doesn't have to be in the news, you understand? We know, right, we know that there's a lot of things that go on in certain countries. I mean, come on, you're trying to tell me that there's no British influence in places like Nigeria and places like...
Of course there is, but your point was that an African country starts, to use your expression, gets a foothold and then the West knocks it down. And I don't think you can point to any country.
You know what? I can point to many countries.
Well, just share some of them with me.
All right, okay, fine. Right? Nigeria.
But
right?
Hold on.
Nigeria, right, is a country that if people butted out, right, the corruption that goes on there, and people keep calling Nigerians fraudulent and corrupt.
I don't.
Well, that you're a minority, my brother. You're a minority. You are one of hundreds.
But surely. You must see, Michael, the problems... Now, whether some of the groundwork for the problems was laid by Western bomb, but the problems today in Nigeria are Nigerian-made, not British-made.
Oh, brother, let's not fool ourselves. Come on now. Right, come on now. Bring their money to England, and England welcomes them, sells them houses, and gives them all sorts of titles, and, you know, they all backslap each other, and you're trying to tell me that the British influence isn't there? Come on.
But how is that affecting daily life of Nigerians?
Because the Nigerian economy is absolutely rubbish, so Nigerians come over here, some of them illegally, right, and they try to make a better life for themselves.
All right, okay. Michael, I've enjoyed our conversation. Look after yourself. We're late to the news. Coming up after the news, Gianni Infantino, FIFA boss, soccer supremo. But was this a foul?
Virtually no incidents. For the first time in history, also, no Brit was arrested during a World Cup. Imagine.
Now an apology, but I'll remind you of some incidents where it would appear that Infantino had put the ball in the back of the net. It's 8:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says it'll provide whatever assistance is needed as police consider new allegations against Lord Mandelson. A review's found there were several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M2 is closed westbound between junctions 5 at Sittingbourne and 4 at Gillingham. It's following an accident and there are delays all the way back to junction 6 at Faversham. Surrounding routes are extremely busy, especially the A249. Eastbound is open but very slow because of onlookers. On the Kent stretch of the M25, there are delays anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel. A lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound to junction 10 at Luton Airport, and that's following an accident that happened earlier. On the Underground, the Metropolitan line is suspended again between Harrow on the Hill and Aldgate, and then there are severe delays on the rest of the line.
LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked-up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Idle money chills in your current account. Parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, Busy Money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh, just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Come back to our conversation concerning asylum seekers and take your calls on that in just a moment. But let's go to another area and talk about a soccer supremo, FIFA boss Gianni Infantino. He was in Davos, the World Economic Forum in Switzerland, just a few weeks ago, and he gave his views on British soccer fans.
We had virtually no incidents. For the first time in history, also, no Brit was arrested during a World Cup. imagine. This is something really, really special.
And yet yesterday there was a sort of change of tack, perhaps after a VAR. Here is Mr. Infantino speaking on Sky News.
First of all, I use the word Brit. You know, that no Brit was arrested at the World Cup.
So you offended the whole...
So I offended, the Scots, the Welsh and the Northern Irish. So I need to first apologize. It was meant to be more of a light-hearted remark to show that that actually, the World Cup in Qatar was a celebration, was a peaceful event, and everyone came together in a peaceful way.
But if you actually, and you heard Yalda Hakim with Sky News, if you actually look at it, unfortunately, the English in particular have a pretty poor track record with World Cups. The German World Cup, 378 English fans were held in custody. More recently, you might recall the Euro 2024 semi-final. 2020 final, 86 arrests. And 15 arrests at the Euro 2024 semi-final. So, is he right to apologise? Ellis Cashmore is a professor, sociologist and author of Sport and Crime. What happens when a group of, it would seem, mostly young men, get together to follow a sports team and they suddenly get aggressive? Why? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. They don't always get aggressive. They actually hang around, have a few drinks, and they're not always exclusively men. Football over here nowadays is more of a family occasion. They may be with their daughters and their wives, and they'll have a few drinks. They may go to the restaurant at the club, and they'll take their seats, and they'll cheer and have a good time, but they won't necessarily be motivated to get involved in any punch-ups. Now, Infantino, of course, is drawing on a very enduring and stable and, let's face it, well-earned stereotype that has its roots in the 1970s, 80s, a little bit into the 90s, but pretty much by the end of the last century, violence had been eliminated from football over here. And really, there is no appetite. Now, let me qualify this by saying, if he'd have said Europeans, then he may have been more accurate, because violence, that appetite that I refer to, just that appetite for violence, does seem to be enduring in Europe. In fact, there seems to be a great appetite for it in Eastern Europe in particular, and to a lesser extent in Western Europe. But we, English rather than Brits, have seemed to have moved on in the evolutionary progress and left all that kind of stuff behind us.
Ellis, what is it about footy? This weekend, I will go to Twickenham and I will see England play Wales, and there's every likelihood I will have a Welsh fan in front of me, behind me, and the likelihood of it kicking off is beyond, below zero. What is it about footy?
Well, the history of the game is quite different from rugby. It's predominantly a working class game, has its origins in England in the late 19th century, when fans weren't simply cheering their teams on, they were representing something else, whether it be their factory, their religion, their locality where they lived. And the passions were high. Being boisterous was very much part of the fabric of the sport. In other words, violence was not out of the ordinary for many years leading up to the Second World War. The period we saw after the Second World War in the 1950s was unusual. You know, it wasn't really violent at all. And the reason for that is, of course, people had had enough violence during the World War, so they wanted an altogether more passive sport to enjoy.
I will leave it there. Ellis, thank you. Ellis Cashmore, professor, sociologist, wrote Sport and Crime 5-9. We're talking about, well, some of you, the criminal activity, as some of you call it, of asylum seekers, and whether they should get council houses specifically built for them. Adam's in Maidstone. Your reaction to that, Adam? Good morning.
Hiya, Nick. Yeah, that's just a crazy thought. I mean, it's the fairness. This is what people get really wound up with, is the fairness of it. It's like, hold on a minute, you've got veterans sleeping out on the street that have fought for the country, PTSD, and then you've got illegal migrants throwing their documents in the channel and they get free brand new houses. It's the fairness of it that winds people up. but I have wrote some steps down and some points where I think I can take a centre-right view on this.
Good.
Where it's humane and it's correct.
Right. Go ahead.
So, obviously, do all these things in conjunction with each other. So, step one, you need to minimise the pull factor. So, taking away certain benefits, like free mobile phones and day trips out, stuff like that. Minimise the pull factor. Give them just enough so they can get by, okay?
Yep.
Step two, make it law and known if you arrive in Britain via an illegal route, i.e. a small boat crossing or the back of a lorry, you'll never be able to claim asylum. If anybody does arrive via a legal route, you'll be detained.
How are you going to get here if you've come from Sudan?
So, you go via a port of entry, an airport or a seaport, with your documents. If you are fleeing prosecution or a dangerous country and you're willing to pay £5,000 to come over on a dinghy, you can pay £1,000 on a Wizz Air flight to get over here.
And indeed, it's going to be a lot cheaper than paying the people traffickers.
Exactly. And then we're minimising these gangs. We're not paying them any money. You give Wizz Air some money to, or whatever, you know, whatever flight to come over. With your documents, you go, I am from X country. You know, the people go onto the system. Yes, that is a dangerous country. They have a genuine claim. So we know that people coming across on the small boats, yes, there is a proportion of them that are generally fleeing prosecution. Fair play. But we know a hell of a lot of them are not fleeing prosecution. That's the problem.
That's the problem, and that's the solution as you see it. Adam, thank you. A lot of reaction coming in on my conversation concerning the apology by the football, the FIFA boss. Can I give your name? Yeah. Davey, what a load of nonsense. As a former football hooligan of the 80s, and I only stopped after getting stabbed at Celtic, I can tell you why violence is at football, and it's the truth no one wants to look at. It's because we enjoyed it. John asks, how many supporters were arrested at the Women's Euros? I would say almost certainly none, by the way. Kevin Yorkshire, I'm off to support Scotland versus Italy and Rome for rugby. No anticipation of any violence. However, it's English fans, not Scottish, Northern Irish or Welsh, that have a bad history in football. Let's talk about that with Mark in Brighton. Mark, your reaction to what Gianni Infantino said and has now apologised for. Good morning.
Good morning. Personally, I take no offence whatsoever. I'm British.
You're a football fan?
It was a light, humoured little jibe.
Yeah. Are you a
not intelligent enough to understand that it was meant as a light-hearted joke.
Yes, are you a football fan?
No, not at all.
Ah, well, I wonder if you were, whether, seeing as this doesn't apply to you whatsoever, so it's a brilliant idea to put this forward as a call. If it were, would you be a little bit more offended, lastly, Mark? What do you think?
No, not really, because I understand it. We've got a reputation from the past. It's a little jibe. It's a friendly joke.
Yes.
We can't live in a world where people can't see the difference between... this is the trouble. We focus on words, not context.
And it was only someone having a bit of a jibe, says Mark. I can tell you in a vehicle, safe driving, the music means you can tell we have to move on, but thank you. And we move on by going back in time. David Cameron, as Prime Minister now, Lord Cameron, speaking in 2015 about the implementation of free schools.
I want more parents to wake up with that security, that stability, that knowledge that their child is going to a great school. Free schools are delivering that.
Now, in a powerful piece in one of her newspapers, the Daily Telegraph, he accuses the Labour administration of being spiteful and effectively dismantling what he's done or he put together with his teams. In other news...
Councils, including Buckinghamshire, are using dashcam footage to fine littering drivers. But would you rat on your neighbours? I'm LBC Shivani Sharma in Milton Keynes, finding out.
And news is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Downing Street says it'll provide whatever assistance is needed as police consider new allegations against Lord Mandelson. Documents appear to show he leaked government data to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. Number 10 has ordered an urgent review into Lord Mandelson's contact with Epstein. The Labour MP Graham Stringer has told Nick the saga could have wider implications for the Prime Minister.
Appointing Peter Mandelson was one of many mistakes the government's made.
And I think if we do badly in the Gorton and Denton by-election, if we do badly in the local elections, then there will be a reassessment by Labour MPs how well this government's doing and what we should do about it.
Which I take to mean you might need to change your leader.
That would be one of the possibilities, yeah.
Peter Mandelson says none of the latest Epstein files indicate wrongdoing on his part. Separately, Bill and Hillary Clinton have agreed to testify in a congressional investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. They made the announcement days before a vote on whether to hold them in contempt for previously refusing to appear. In other news this morning, a review has found several missed opportunities to manage the behaviour of a schoolboy who stabbed a pupil to death in Sheffield. Mohammed Umar Khan murdered 15-year-old Harvey Wilgoose last February. Submerged All Saints Catholic High School didn't look at Khan's record before transferring there. Harvey's parents, Mark and Caroline Wilgoose, have told LBC too many red flags were missed.
If they'd have done what they should be doing, Harvey'd still be here today. And that's, I think we all feel that.
I mean, that's the worst for me. There was 130 incidences at the other school, but then All Saints still took him on.
The trust that runs the school says it's fully implemented the review's recommendations. Ukraine says Russia has fired more than 70 missiles at the country overnight. The strikes again targeted energy infrastructure during freezing conditions. At least 9 people have been injured. Families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. A new £10 million programme will cover the cost of travelling to treatment up until the age of 24. And NASA has delayed the launch of its manned rocket to the moon until March at the earliest. Engineers discovered a fuel leak during testing for the Artemis 2 mission. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 22 at 10,364. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Some hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Tesco Mobile, club card prices are frozen, so your contract price stays on ice. Get the iPhone 17 with 12 gigs of data and an iPad, all for just £45.99 a month for 36 months with club card prices, saving you £126. And it stays like that for the length of your contract. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 22nd of March. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine on Tuesday, the 3rd of February. The assertion by a former Prime Minister that the current Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, is taking, and I quote, a spite-laden wrecking ball to England's schools. If you have a child or children, they think a lesson needs to be learnt about education and education reform, do share it with us. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, talking about schools, it's a year to the day since Harvey Wilgoose was murdered. Now, he was frightened to go into his school in Sheffield because of high instances of people taking knives. His mum, Caroline, spoke with LBC.
Parents are jumping on board. It's what the kids want as well, safety in schools. It's changing things, and that's what's driving me, and that's what's keeping me going.
Plus, later in the hour, LBC will take to the roads.
If you've dropped something, you don't realise it, then that's absolutely fine. But if you're blatantly littering, and then potentially, yeah, why not?
Good friends with my neighbours, I probably wouldn't. I'll probably mention it to them.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Lord Cameron writes in today's Daily Telegraph, it's a punchy piece. I've just spent the last news bulletin reading it all. It opens, or the intro as it's called in the business, "You were the future once," quotes. "It's just over 20 years since I looked across the House of Commons at Prime Minister Tony Blair and said those words. Some people remember the occasion. My first ever outing at Prime Minister's questions as leader of the opposition." Quite understandably, Lord Cameron goes on, hardly anyone remembers the context. But Lord Cameron points out he was offering to support Tony Blair's education reforms, creating more independent academy schools within the state sector. And he says, Neil Cameron says, "I urged him to be bolder." Towards the end of the article, he says, "I came into politics because I wanted to spread opportunity. Education reform was one of the most direct and effective ways of achieving it. With academies and free schools, we showed the poorest pupils can get the best results." He goes on, "One of my proudest moments as Prime Minister was seeing some of our free schools send more pupils to Oxford and Cambridge than independent schools. And here's the kicker. Yet here are Labour curbing aspiration, curtailing excellence, levelling down and denying so many children the opportunity they deserve. They are the future, which is why we must halt these damaging and nonsensical plans. Now, these plans were addressed by the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillotson, speaking with me last year about changes to academies.
I work very closely with the Confederation of School Trusts and with academy leaders across our country, and they do fantastic work. What I want to do is to share some of that brilliant practice that they've developed over many years across all schools. So the changes that we're setting out would make sure that, for example, all teachers in our classrooms are qualified. I think your listeners would expect that for the child, for the teacher in front of their child's class. Alongside that, making sure that the flexibilities that some schools enjoy, so they can attract and retain the best teachers, are available to all schools. This is about how we deliver a system where all parents and all children have a core set of entitlements, and that wherever you are in the country, you can be guaranteed a brilliant education.
Let's bring Meg Powell-Chandra into the conversation, Director of New Schools Network, former Special Advisor to Damien Hines as Education Secretary, and joining me now. Can I ask you, if I may call you Meg, good morning to you, Meg, and can I ask you to outline the reforms, the ones that are causing controversy, what they're seeking to do and why they deem to be so controversial. Morning, Meg.
Morning. Thanks, Nick. So within the schools bill, there is a lot of content, but the thing that is causing school leaders and parents and Lord Cameron today in the Telegraph concern is the removal of academy freedoms. Now, this is the freedom to do things differently. At the moment, they can offer a slightly different curriculum. They still have to offer a broad and balanced curriculum as determined by Ofsted, but they can deviate from the national curriculum. They don't have to employ qualified teachers. A lot of them still do, but they don't have to. And they've also got freedom and flexibility around offering different pay and conditions from what is laid out or centrally agreed by the government. And actually, interesting listening to Bridget Phillotson's there, she said she wanted more schools to have the flexibilities that some schools have. A lot of those flexibilities have actually been delivered because of the freedoms that academies have. They have actually changed the terms and conditions they offer their teachers to improve recruitment. And so sometimes you actually have better teaching conditions at some schools than others.
Meg, why would it be in the pupils' or the school's interest to have teachers who aren't qualified?
So I think it's not necessarily about whether or not the teacher has the training or the qualification. It's about the barrier to entry for me. So it's not saying if a teacher comes into teaching, they may come from a specialist background. A lot of the time it's really difficult to get a maths teacher, or it's really difficult to get a sports teacher or something like that. And you're able to attract someone in who might be an economist or something like that. They might not be a trained teacher, but they have that expertise. Now they become a teacher.
When you say they, and you're much closer to this to us, but surely, you know, you can be an absolute crash hot economist with Barclays or Santander 100%. Or whatever, but you haven't got that gift to teach. You could be a PE instructor with the army. I'm thinking of that. But, you know, and so you've got discipline. But that ability that I've not got, by the way, to be a teacher, it doesn't just come because you're a successful economist, does it, Meg?
100%. But it's about the barrier to entry. So you can have that skill, that knowledge, come in and get the job and then have teacher training on the job. So that, I think, is something that by erecting this barrier to entry at a time when the labour market is becoming more fluid and actually people are changing their careers all the time, by introducing this barrier to entry to become a teacher, my opposition to it isn't saying that teachers shouldn't be trained. It's just saying that you need to have the training before you become the teacher. Loads of free schools and loads of academies will take talented young professionals and then train them in-house and give them their own training. And that has been really, really successful at delivering fantastic teachers.
Is Lord Cameron guilty of a bit of hyperbole when he suggests that he talks about his proudest moment watching some of our free schools send more pupils to Oxford and Cambridge than independent schools? That doesn't necessarily have to change as a result of these reforms, does it, Meg?
Well, I think you've got to listen to some of the school leaders that are talking about these reforms. A lot of them do not know where the government is coming from, what problems they are trying to change. A lot of them have raised concerns about the lack of flexibility that these changes will mean that they have in their schools. They have raised concerns about the space for innovation and actually continuing to try and improve things, shrinking with increased centralisation and standardisation of education in the country.
Enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for giving us all the background and pointing out what's causing the disputes. Meg Powell-Chandler, director of New Schools Network, former special advisor to Damien Hines as education secretary. Let's bring into the conversation your calls. That's what we're about in the morning. Alex is in Newham, and I understand you're in education. Is that right, Alex? Good morning.
That's right, Nick. My name is Alex Crossan. I'm the head teacher of the London Academy of Excellence that has been on your programme and in the press more widely this week.
Right, yes, indeed. Oh, well, you've got to keep... Right, gosh, we really have got the horse's mouth. OK, sir, what do you make of the reforms? What do you make of Lord Cameron's intervention?
Well, look, I mean, I probably wouldn't have intervened using the same language, but I think Lord Cameron is undoubtedly right about two things. The first is that we need a more of a cross-party consensus on what actually works in education. And the second is, self-interestedly, we need more schools like the one that I have the great privilege to run.
What makes your school a great school? Why does it work, hopefully, for the teachers as well as the pupils and the parents?
Well, why does it work? I mean, it works in part, and I could give you the fluffy answer, which is all to do with ethos, and that is sincere. It's really about putting together a group of like-minded students and teachers who have common goals and aspirations and who are prepared to work together in a mutually supportive environment. But there is also a component to this that we should be open and honest about, and that it requires resource that is not typically available in the state sector.
What happens, well done to you and all your colleagues, what happens with a school that's failing? How would these reforms address that, or how would they fail to address that?
How would the proposals in the forthcoming white paper address that?
Yes.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not sure that we know. I'm not sure that we know. I mean, the default response over the last several years has been to academise where schools are judged to be failing.
Yes.
I'm not sure we have a response to that.
Lord Cameron says, only last week Labour voted to scrap automatic academy orders for failing schools, interventions that have repeatedly been proven to turn schools around quickly. In their place, Labour proposes bureaucratic advisory teams, despite there being no evidence that such structures deliver improvement. As you're in the field, you'll want a failing school turned around as quickly as anybody to help those kiddies, but it just bureaucratic changes. I don't know that, or bureaucratic advisory teams, that's not going to change anything, is it?
Well, those are what are called RISE networks. So those are regional school improvement boards. I mean, would that be my preferred solution? No, it would not. I suppose we should give them some opportunity to demonstrate their efficacy. But no, I think broadly speaking, a more direct form of intervention led by schools and school leaders who are already delivering outcomes for students would be a preferable outcome.
When I was speaking to my contributor, she said it seemed a good idea that someone who was very proficient in economics or possibly in physical education could come in and be a teacher. My concern is that there is, and I mean this, there is a gift to being a teacher. I can think of the teachers who turned the light bulb of knowledge on in my head. They were extraordinary individuals. Surely there is something special about a teacher, Alex.
I mean, you don't really expect me to say no.
But would you ever employ? Would you employ an army PT instructor to do PT for your pupils?
So we wouldn't hear, but what we have done very successfully is to employ PhD and postdoctoral research candidates to come into the school and who train to be teachers. So they do achieve QTS in line with government's changed expectations, but they do that over time in much the same way as Meghpal Chandler just described.
Lastly, I sense you probably relish almost every day of your working life. How would you sell a role in education to listeners now, to young people who are thinking what they want to do with their lives?
Oh, well, look, I mean, it is still the most impactful, most rewarding thing I can imagine doing. I appreciate it, you know, that I happen to do that under some quite fortunate circumstances right now. But it's always impactful. It's always remarkable. I can't think of anything that gives you the opportunity to make such an impact on a young person's life.
Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I'll let you crack on with your day with your colleagues and the pupils. Alex, thank you. More calls coming in on that. And sadly, a story involving schools on a very different level. It was a year ago today that Harvey Wilgoose lost his life. He wasn't going into a school in Sheffield because of the high number of knives that were being taken in by fellow pupils.
On the anniversary of the murder of a teenager, a report found multiple missed safeguarding opportunities at his school. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
9:15, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says it'll provide whatever assistance is needed as police consider new allegations against Lord Mandelson. MPs are set to vote for the first time later on the government's legislation to lift the two-child benefit cap. And young people in England diagnosed with cancer will have the cost of travelling for treatment paid for by the government. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most, hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M2 has reopened westbound at Junction 5 at Sittingbourne, but there are still severe delays back to Junction 6 at Faversham. Also, delays continue on the M20 westbound to the M25 junction, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. In Walthamstow, Forest Road is closed both ways after an accident, and that's causing queues. And in Snaresbrook, it's still very busy on New Wanstead going southbound to the High Street, but all the lanes are now back open. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines, and now minor delays on the Circle line, and still no southern trains running between Horsham and Dorking. The emergency repair works are still taking place.
This is LBC.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Every day, the noise gets louder. Deadlines tighter, commutes longer, opinions stronger, and social media fakes get harder to spot. You need concise, verified, easy access to the stories that matter. You need the Bulletin app. Trusted news from The Independent in a simple, bite-sized format. Download Bulletin today on iOS or Android. Bulletin. Trusted news for seriously busy people.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Coming to your calls, Carol, you'll be the first caller. There seem to be three key changes that have annoyed many educationalists and a former Prime Minister, David, now Lord Cameron. The ability to offer freedoms, the ability to offer a different style of curriculum. Main subjects, of course, have to be covered, but allowing a degree of laxity there. Having teachers who are not qualified. Now, that's the one that jumps out at me. And also, actually, pay. Not being locked into a rigid pay structure. I think that's a mistake. If you have to pay a little extra cash to get a head of English, whatever it might be, then you're going to be paying normal, but you've got real issues with your English and your school's failing. Surely you should be allowed to do that. Should that all be dictated from the centre? Carol and Borenwood, what's your point? What's your view on all this, Carol? Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking the call. If I can start at the beginning,
please.
A non-qualified teacher does not mean to say that they don't have talent. However, if you do have a qualification, it gives you the confidence, and God knows you need it in front of those classrooms today.
Right.
So perhaps behavioural issues should have been prime in this investigation, research, or whatever you want to call it. Mm. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you are lessening the curriculum, and now you've got a non-qualified teacher, are they going to be able to stay on topic in order to prepare the children for what they need to do going forward? Tony Blair famously said education, education, education. But under his watch, year nine, SATs were removed. They were brilliant. They prepared children for the enormous hike up that they now have to face, and it would have been less if they'd done SATs at year nine, when they go into year 10. Again, because the rest of
year nine, typically they're going to be about 14, aren't they, or something, 13, 14.
Yeah, that's the year before they start GCSE study.
Yeah.
So by having that, it was a stepping stone. It helped them. But the combination of all of the things that are being proposed today are not going to help. They really are not. But ask yourself, why do they want to have non-qualified teachers going into school? And I come back to my earlier issue about behaviour matters, because more teachers are leaving, so they have to get people in there somehow. And that's the reason why they're doing it. It's all behaviour.
Have you been a teacher?
You know I have. I hope you remember.
Yes.
I have a PGCE. I have been teaching for many years, and I'm still tutoring.
That's right. And I'm sorry, just I wanted to remind myself of that. I'm
okay.
Grateful.
You speak to loads of people,
No, don't be silly. Carol, do you need something special to be a teacher? Or I use the example again. Or no, let me use the example of my contributor. You are an absolutely superb economist, and you just know everything there is to know about economics, so you could go and impart your knowledge. Or does a teacher need to have a specific something to them?
Yes, they do.
What is it?
If I can say, and you know, I'm not going to mention any names, one of the worst teachers one of my children ever had was an English teacher who was a Cambridge graduate, but had no teaching qualification, as I understand it, at the time, and she was the biggest load of rubbish ever.
Carol, always good hearing from you. Thank you. Kate says, I had a chemistry teacher for A-level. She was an extraordinarily gifted and internationally celebrated chemist, but she was a terrible teacher. Not through lack of effort, but just not having that gift. That's the word I was looking for. That gift that good teachers need to explain and share the information. Neil says, I'm a sports coach with no teaching qualifications, and I think I do an amazing job. I've met so many terrible qualified teachers. It's known to be a job where it's almost impossible to get the sack, whatever your standard is. We'll have more on that with you, Ali, as a caller in a moment. But another story with reference to a school, and a tragic one. The 15-year-old boy was frightened to attend a school in Sheffield because there were so many knives being taken in. Well, it's the anniversary of his death. Alex Taylor-Brown, as LBC's Yorkshire correspondent, he attended a press conference held by the boy's family and their solicitor yesterday, and joins me now. Alex.
Morning, Nick. Well, for the Wildgoose family, they've described the last 12 months, as you can imagine, as a nightmare. It was February the 3rd, 2025. 15-year-old Harvey Wildgoose went to school and never came home. He was stabbed twice in the chest here at All Saints Catholic High School by fellow pupil Mohammed Umar Khan. He was also 15 and sentenced to life in prison in October for murder with a minimum term of 16 years. Now, 1 year on, a report into safeguarding at the school has found a number of missed opportunities, culminating in Harvey being stabbed. Now, the family have seen the report and, speaking at this press conference, said that it revealed Khan had 130 incidents relating to violence against his name before moving to All Saints Catholic High School. So this is the previous school that he was at before he came here. The report goes into detail talking about how this school, All Saints, didn't ask for his behavioural record before he arrived here. Now, whilst he was at All Saints, there were instances where he was reported to have carried a knife in October 2024. In December that same year, his own mother found an axe in his school bag, which he bought from another pupil here at the school. Now, the report commissioned by the trust that runs this school says they were not acted upon. For Caroline and Harvey's dad, Mark, they say if actions were taken, Harvey would still be alive today.
100%.
Yeah.
If they'd have done what they should be doing, Harvey'd still be here today. And that's, I think we all feel that.
I mean, that's the worst for me. There was 130 incidences at the other school, but then All Saints still took him on.
Now, the death of Harvey came just a week after another incident here at the school, reportedly involving a knife. There was a lockdown procedure went in place. Khan wasn't the one accused of having a knife in that instance, but he was within the group of boys who were involved. Now, Mark and Caroline say there was an opportunity to search Khan the day that he killed Harvey.
So obviously there was a live investigation going on around the first lockdown, and he was heavily involved in that. He didn't go to school, did he? He went off for 2 days, and then he just walked back in. And I think part of that report is that was a massive failing.
And he walked in, and the teacher said, "You haven't got anything you shouldn't have on you, have you?" And he said, "No. If you've got a reason to ask, you've got a reason to search."
The family are calling for mandatory record checks for pupils moving schools. The school says it has made rigorous changes to safeguarding since Harvey's death, including updated search protocols, plans for pupils involved in knife incidents, as well as regular meetings on violent incidents. Now, Nick, the report is not being released in full by the Trust due to what's being described as sensitivities. The other angle to this as well is the campaign that Caroline and Mark have been heavily involved in around knife arches in school. Perhaps controversial for some parents, but they feel that a knife arch in place, some sort of prevention, may have also led to Harvey being saved. And this is something that we've been following along with the family for the past year. A number of these knife arches have been installed across schools in South Yorkshire. We were with the family last year in one in Barnsley that had one installed thanks to their campaigning. Caroline tells me that she wants that to be Harvey's legacy.
I think people are listening to me now. Parents are jumping on board. It's what the kids want as well, safety in schools. It's changing things, and that's what's driving me, and that's what's keeping me going.
Now, the family, Nick, say they want to meet with the Education Secretary to discuss safety in schools as well. Today, 1 year on from the tragic scenes here at this school, the Wilgoose family are taking time to reflect and remember Harvey, affectionately known to his friends as Goose.
Alex Taylor-Brown reporting. Let's come back to other education matters. Ali, coming to you in just a moment. Ant in Derry says, listening to Cameron spout on about being proud to help poor kids in education after the devastation he caused to the country with his austerity is enough to make me sick. Lorraine in the North East says, it takes a lot more skill to be a teacher than just subject knowledge. All teachers should be on the same standards, pay and conditions. If they're not, these are common, education runs the risk of becoming fragmented. Henry in Norfolk, private schools don't require teachers to be qualified. When I was in sixth form about a decade ago, one of my best teachers didn't have any teaching qualifications. The teacher in question was working towards her qualifications, but throughout my A-levels she was not qualified. Having a teaching qualification does not mean you're a good teacher. Round and round we go. Ali in Harrow, are we talking about one of your children's schools or your child's school? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, so, hi Nick.
Hello, sir.
So I've got a son in secondary school, which is an academy.
Yep.
And he's had medical issues since going to school. Over the years, it's got worse.
Might I ask what you mean by medical? Not if you don't want to say, but you mean emotional health issues? Or what have we got here?
So he's got neurological issues.
Ah, right.
So he's been in and out of hospital. He's under the care of certain specialists. So we've had a bit of a nightmare. So
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
How old is the boy?
He is 13.
13, right. Key age.
Yes, exactly. So starting, he's had issues over the years, so his attendance hasn't been that good. But starting September, he has missed pretty much 90% of school due to health conditions. Now, since September, he has not had a great communication with the school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we got to find out that when you miss a certain amount of school, let's say 15 days, the council gets involved because they have to trigger a certain thing where council has to get involved and they have to find out why the kid is missing so much school. So what's happened is that never got triggered. And my son has missed so much school that it's affected his health, his education.
Are the school trying to work with you on this?
Well, this is the thing. They're not. So as an academy, we thought as parents, not knowing the education system, that the academy would be more involved, but we're not getting education, you know. We've been missing 90% of school at a key year. You know, we're just getting materials sent through emails.
So what are you trying to do? What do you need to do?
So we need to know what can we do as parents. Hmm. Because this whole education system is very confusing, you know, especially with academies. I don't know. I think academies are very different to state schools. They have different rules. They have their own budgets. They have their own say in a lot of ways. So maybe they can get away with a lot more. I don't know. but it's affected our son, and we're going through hell at the moment just to get him some education.
Is there any charity that can offer you some assistance, Ali?
So we've been in touch with the council, you know, and they've offered, you know, emotional support.
Okay.
Which is great, which is good for the boy.
Yes.
But education-wise, they've told us to go back to the school, who will then activate some education, like home tuition. It's been a while now since we put that request in. We've had the meeting at home with the council for this tuition, but it still hasn't been activated. The welfare people at the school, you know, including the special needs coordinator, they've been involved. We've had hours and hours amounts of meetings with them, but we're just not getting anywhere.
I have to go to the news, but I want you to stay in touch. Please do let us know after you have the next series of meetings. One of my colleagues will have a quick word with you so we can pass on one of the producers' emails so you can stay in touch, because all my listeners will want to know how you will get on. But we're already late to the news. Ali, I wish you luck with that young man. That is a real challenge. We'll stay with this. Also, coming up after the news...
I've been driving in my car.
If you've dropped something and you don't realise it, then that's absolutely fine. But if you're blatantly littering, and then potentially, yeah, why not?
I probably wouldn't. Probably mention it to them.
We're off to Buckinghamshire, one of a handful of local authorities asking for you to provide video evidence to help tackle a problem. So would you dob in someone who you had on your dash cam throwing litter out the window? We'll get to that after this. It's 9:32. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time. Dominic Ellis.
Downing Street says it'll provide whatever assistance is needed as police review new allegations against Lord Mandelson. Documents appear to show he forwarded government emails to Jeffrey Epstein while he was business secretary in 2009. MPs are set to vote for the first time later on the government's legislation to lift the two-child benefit cap. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation says it'll mean around 400,000 fewer children will be living in poverty. And families of children with cancer in England are going to have their travel costs covered by the government. A new £10 million programme will cover the cost of travelling to treatment up until the age of 24. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm JJ Chalmers, and I'm going up and down the country to find out how UK government defence investment is creating opportunities for local people right on their doorsteps. With millions injected into traditional industries, we're seeing how pride and progress are coming together to shape the UK's future for real people. From Scotland to Sheffield, it's creating opportunities that will help support communities for generations to come. This is the UK, and we make it here.
The all-electric Ford e-Transit Custom, loaded with doing power. And now, you could win one. Take a test drive in any Transit Custom to enter and be in with a chance of winning a Ford e-Transit Custom. Search Win a Ford e-Transit Custom and book online. To enter, take a test drive between the 1st of January and the 28th of February. Ready, set, Ford. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
You have to wait in traffic. You have to wait for your coffee. But you shouldn't have to wait for healthcare. Nuffield Health offers online booking and consultant appointments within 48 hours. No hidden costs, with one price covering all your private healthcare during and after treatment. You can spread the cost over 24 months with a 0% interest payment plan. Search Nuffield Health Hospitals today. Subject to status, terms and conditions apply. Nuffield Health is a broker. Chrysalis Finance Limited, the lender. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Question for you. How far would you go to keep Britain tidy? Would you dob in another motorist? If you had dash cam evidence of someone throwing, I don't know, a Kit Kat, a Mars bar, a Twix wrap or whatever it might be, a bottle of drink, McDonald's or Kentucky Fried Chicken or Burger King box, I don't know that I would. Now, if I went by and someone was in a van, was unloading the entire contents of a kitchen or something like that, or a bathroom or a smashed toilet in someone's front garden, I might if I had evidence of that. But the other thing troubles me. So what do we make of Buckinghamshire being among a handful of local authorities asking for motorists to give video evidence from the public to help tackle a problem that costs more, not just in Buckinghamshire, but globally or across the country, £1 billion a year to clean up? In Buckinghamshire, it's called For Buck's Sake. I hope you heard that correctly. And LBC's Shivani Sharma has joined us from Milton Keynes in Buckinghamshire. Joins me now. Shivani, good morning.
Nick, good morning. If you live in areas like this here in Buckinghamshire, you may want to think twice about dropping that tissue or McDonald's packet or cigarette butt, because the message coming out of councils like these is you never know who is watching and where they'll come from. Now, they're recruiting members of the public to help them catch littering motorists by using dash cam footage as well as AI-powered CCTV. Now, councils were given the power to hand out £500 fines to littering motorists back in 2018, but the recruitment of members of the public with campaigns, as you say, like For Buck's Sake here in Buckinghamshire, where passers-by are asked to submit video footage, is a more recent phenomenon. So the key question, would the people of Milton Keynes rat out their neighbours?
If I'm really good friends with my neighbours, I probably wouldn't. I'll probably mention it to them. However, if you're not on good terms with your neighbours, then maybe you might see it as a good idea.
If I had a bad dash cam, I might actually pass that on. Maybe if you could see the driver was struggling with children in the car or something, I might have some sympathy, but no, generally, I don't.
If you've dropped something, you don't realise it, then that's absolutely fine. But if you're blatantly littering, and then potentially, yeah, why not? We all pay our council tax. We have to pay for people to come out and pick up after you.
So if it came down to it, you'd be happy to sort of dob your neighbour in?
I'd probably speak to my neighbour, to be honest. I don't feel I'd need to go to the council. I would actually just speak to them.
Now, since April last year, Buckinghamshire Council has issued 154 fixed penalty notices for littering from vehicles, amounting to about £77,000 in fines. Although how many fines have actually been paid is far more questionable, with some people trying to dodge them with excuses like pretending they've moved house. But it's not just Buckinghamshire, Nick. Councils in London, Leicestershire, Yorkshire have been trialling other schemes involving AI software to try and crack down on this and follow other countries with no litter, an issue which, as you say, over here is costing the taxpayer around £1 billion per year.
LBC's Shivani Sharma reporting on the For Buck's Sake initiative in Buckinghamshire. Let's get calls on that. Marilyn's in Hemel Hempstead. Marilyn, would you dob someone in? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm interested in this subject purely because where I live, in Decorum, we
that's
have a group
that's the
called
local
Decorum
borough, just to explain. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's Hemel Hempstead and surrounding villages. And we have a litter group called the Decorum Litter Champions. And over time, there must be almost 1,000 of us. And we go out regularly without organisation. We just go when we feel that we should.
Mm.
And my husband and I, we've adopted a stretch of a road just because it's easy for us to walk along it. And I can guarantee that 90% of the litter along there comes out of cars.
Right.
There's very little footfall. So I don't think dobbing people in is the right approach. I think education, going all the way back to the things that we had in the 70s, where we were all taught about litter.
Yeah.
But the problem has got so big because of fast food, cans, people are drinking and driving, they're throwing bottles and cans out of the windows.
Right.
I mean, I could guarantee if I walked up there next week, I'd get 4 or 5 bags of litter.
How long have you been a Decorum litter champion?
4 years.
What's the strangest thing you've picked up by the side of the road?
Well, it goes in phases. The strangest thing would be these gas canisters. that I think people actually inhale.
Oh, right, yes.
parts of cars. I mean, it's random. It's so random. Underwear has come out of the window.
Underwear? Oh, my God.
Yes.
Hell's going on in decorum. Well, you've lost your decorum in decorum. You see what I did there?
There's no decorum in decorum.
There's no decorum. But would you dob in your neighbour?
I'd probably have a word with the neighbour. I wouldn't dob them in. And I certainly wouldn't bother with the police. They've got enough to do.
I agree with that. The only circumstance, and lastly, would be, I don't know if you have this problem by you and Hemel, but sometimes by fields you will see rogue builders will just throw out an entire kitchen or entire bathroom.
I have done that. I have filmed two trucks going down the lane in Sandridge.
Yep.
And I've seen, first of all, the fast food wrappers come out of the driver's door and the passenger door.
Yeah.
And then I've seen them pull into a lay-by, tip it out, and then just buzz off. Now, that falls to everyone to pay for, doesn't it?
Now, that is something I probably would, because I'm going to say that's a criminal activity. I know it's a crime to throw a cigarette wrap box or whatever out of your window, but that really is outrageous behaviour. Marilyn, look after yourself walking up and down those roads in decorum. Hemel Hempstead. Sam is in Buckinghamshire, in Bledlow. Are you aware of this initiative? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Nick. Yes, I am. I live in the more sort of rural countryside.
Right.
And quite often we have litter sort of strewn down the lanes and such. And we have a few lay-bys that sometimes even get the pleasantry of fly tippers.
Right.
And it's appalling to see, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's particularly people throwing wrappers out of car windows. It's already somewhere suitable, you know. Why throw it out the window when you're transporting it somewhere and it's going to be?
Because you're rude and you have no manners. That's probably why you
absolutely.
But if you were driving behind that person and you had video evidence on what's called your dash cam, would you dob them into the local authority?
If it was ridiculous, I mean, maybe excuse like a packet of crisps or something, you might assume it could be a child doing it or something. It would have to be something substantial. Maybe not so much the police, but maybe a local council authority or something would be more appropriate instead of wasting police time on something like this.
And lastly, how big a problem is it in your part of Buckinghamshire?
It comes and goes, to be honest. Okay. As a general, it's not too bad. It's still not pleasant to see, but we do have fly tippers that do the rounds now and then, and they seem to just do it all in one hit and fill up all the lay-bys at once sort of thing, and then that becomes quite the issue. So,
thanks for that. Look after yourself. Rob says, I would 100% report someone for throwing rubbish out of their car. It's a real bugbear of mine seeing roads strewn with litter. Where I live, they drive 20 miles from a burger restaurant and decide to chuck it out of their car before they get home. Same subject. Mick in Sutton Coldfield. I've most definitely dobbed my neighbour. She's my mother-in-law. There you go. See what he did there? Thank you for that. What's the time? We've got time for one more. Humphrey's in Wimbledon. Humphrey, would you dob someone in?
I most certainly would, but I also pick up. Physically pick up and all sorts of bits of litter all around my area.
Why?
South Wimbledon, and put them in suitable bins, because it is untidy to do so.
Right.
And it keeps the area tidy out. I must on average.
Why is this so important to you, Humphrey?
Well, I'm a tidy minded person, and I don't like seeing litter on this.
Right. Okay. I mean, how big a bag do you... how often are you out there? How many bags do you fill?
Well, I think I put possibly four or five pieces of bits of muck and chuck them in the right sort of bins pretty well every single day.
Oh, good gracious. What's the weirdest thing you've ever picked up, Humphrey?
Oh, Lord. Bottles and gin bottles sometimes.
Gin bottle. But you don't get things yes. like TVs or toasters or things like that thrown out the window.
Not quite as big as that. No, not in this area. No.
You look after yourself, Humphrey, when you're litter picking. Humphrey's ready to dob someone in, but are you? 9:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Metropolitan Police is looking into accusations that Lord Mandelson leaked sensitive government information to Jeffrey Epstein. Ukraine says Russia fired more than 70 missiles at the country overnight. And children and young people with cancer in England will have the cost of their travel to hospital paid for by the government. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Hills snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M2 westbound from junction 6 at Faversham to 5 at Sittingbourne. It's after the motorway was closed earlier. It's all open now, but it's still very slow. Long delays on the A2 eastbound from the M25 to the Bean interchange. And that's because a skip lorry has broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. In Walthamstow, very busy. Forest Road is closed both ways after an accident. In Snaresbrook, New Wanstead is partially blocked both ways after an accident. And no Woolwich Ferry running because of the high tide. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line and minor delays continue on the Circle and Hammersmith and City lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
What question would you ask about Lord Mandelson this morning? And the, I think, undeniable fact that his career should have been over long before it was over.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd buy a really nice suit.
It's your lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I'm rich!
But instead of a suit, you buy a jetpack. And ruin your sister's wedding.
So sorry, I'll pay for that!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself. Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's come back to this row over schools or the changes and Lord Cameron's fury. Nick says, I went to my child's parents' evening last week. I was amazed by the number of assistant head teachers there were. My wife's a teacher. I asked her why it was, and basically it gives the state school a free rein with pay structure for them. I'm not saying one or two, possibly 25% of the working teachers were assistant head teachers. Graham and Bushy. We have a business secretary and a chancellor who've never run a business. We have a health secretary who's not a medic and has never worked in a hospital. And we have an education secretary who's not a teacher, has never worked in a school, who's messing up the school systems for private schools and now academies. Brendan in Canterbury on this. Brendan, the point you'd like to make. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good morning. Hello. I've been in and around education for about 20 years. My wife's a primary school teacher. Right. I work in higher education sector. And the art to teach and inspire minds can't be trained. You have to have it. It has to be a vocation. So you mentioned about, well, why can't an economist become a teacher and share their knowledge and do the training? Nick, you could go to uni and study the pedagogy of teaching. You're an intelligent man. But could you go to secondary and teach journalism to your 12-year-old?
No,
you have to.
No.
Yeah, exactly. And patience is part of the vocation. I've seen teachers inspire my daughter.
Yep.
I've seen teachers burn out my best mate's kid. Oh, he said, crikey. Oh, my maths teacher sucks the soul out of me. I sort of did. But he hasn't got the spark. He hasn't got the ability. He has the knowledge, but has he really got the art to inspire 30 minds in 50 minutes?
So where are you on these proposed reforms that have attracted the ire of Lord Cameron?
Well, money talks. So the specialist subjects that you mentioned, they could go to uni and teach or share that knowledge for double the salaries in secondary schools.
Mm.
So their carrots or their suggestions, I just don't think cut it.
What do you think ultimately needs to happen in the education system, lastly, Brendan?
They need better training on how to manage distractions in the classroom, managing challenging behaviour. Unfortunately, the whole social media conversation is having a massive impact on students' learning. I know I'm bringing it up. I know it's boring, but it's true.
It's not boring.
Every conversation in every teacher I speak to is, I'm trying to teach them this subject, but it's not. I can't do it quick enough because they turn off in 30 seconds.
Social media impacts every aspect of our life. You could talk about the lead story today, Peter Mandelson, and the email traffic that there was between him and Epstein. Now, that doesn't conclusively prove that he passed on information, but my goodness me, all the signs would seem to indicate it. Brendan, thanks for your input on that. Last few minutes together, let's go and try and pick up litter. Keep Britain tidy. It's a mantra we should all follow. And in Buckinghamshire, with a new campaign, they're urging motorists to effectively dob in anyone they see in front of them, throwing stuff out of their car or their van, or even possibly from their motorbike. Would you do it? Neil's in Bracknell. Neil, your reaction. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Nice to speak to you again. Yeah, I totally agree with all of this. I was just saying to your researcher that where I used to live, down a country lane near Windsor Great Park, opposite where I lived was is a lay-by. And I was only a school kid then, but my friend was with me, and we saw a whole load of rubbish, big bags of rubbish, mattress, etc. So we went across the road and looked through it and found an envelope with an address.
Oh, right.
I went back inside, showed my mum, and I said, I'm going to call the police.
How old were you?
Then we used to call it junior school, so primary.
Right.
So called the police. Police came out, took the envelope, took it away. Within about an hour, half an hour to an hour, something like that, they came back with the owner, with his vehicle and a trailer, and made him pick it all up and take it away.
Wow. How many years ago was that?
I'll be 60 at the end of this month. So you're going back quite a few years.
You see, I was going to ask you, could you see that happening today?
Probably not, no. Right. And I think when you look at a lot of the areas that we live in, and then I saw, this is quite funny, because I saw on Facebook a comparison of how we live and how nature lives.
Mm-hmm.
And nature lives in a pure, clear environment where we live in a cesspit.
What did the police officer say to you?
He looked at it, and as far as I can remember, he said, well done, thank you very much, we will be dealing with this, something like that, from memory.
Yep.
And he did. But it was back then where we had officers on the beat.
Well, I was going to say, lastly, Neil, I don't think that would ever happen today.
No, it won't. And, you know, we had a local officer, and his nickname was Spike.
Right.
And he literally, I know they have a duty to nick, to arrest anybody and everybody, including members of their family, and he would. And he was that strict that if you walked in the wrong direction, he would have you.
Hold on, slow down. How can you walk in the wrong direction?
You know what I mean. If you stepped out of line, he would have you.
Yeah, I don't think policing's like that now. Neil, I have to move on to get others involved. Very enterprising young man. Rick's in Bournemouth. Rick, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, just a couple of very quick examples of litter throwing down. Mm. I was going along Cable Street in the car and I saw a black cab just throw a polystyrene cup out of the window.
Mm.
That's when he's talking to his mate. And I drove up and I picked the cup up and I gave it back to him. So I think you dropped this. And he was very, very threatening indeed. I had to drive on.
Oh, God. Right.
Second example is when I was Christmas shopping in Ilford. I had two bags, one in each hand, and I saw this chap eating McDonald's. He just threw, there was a litter bin literally a yard away from him. He just threw it on the floor. And I said to him, look, why don't you pick that up? And he attacked me. He threw a few punches.
Oh, my God.
If I'd have put the bags down, he'd have kicked them all over the place. No good stuff for Christmas shopping. So I had to hold the bags and not defend myself. Yeah, so on that basis of trying to do it myself, I would dob people in with the police because that's the only way to do it safely.
Well, that's appalling that you've been effectively assaulted for just trying to keep Britain tidy. Rick, I'm hardly surprised that you're taking the attitude that you have. Thank you for that. Let's be quick. Tim in Amesbury. Tim, you've got about a minute. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there, Nick. Hello, sir. I just, with McDonald's and stuff like that, I would dob people in. But with McDonald's, KFC, what have you, when you do the drive-through, why don't we have the registration of your car printed on the receipt? Because I think that would be a kind of good incentive to not chuck your stuff out the window.
Okay, I hear what you say, and I think you're probably right. There's going to be a cost to that. Has KFC got to pay for that? And Burger King, who's going to pay for it?
No, it's pretty simple. I do airport runs. I'm retired now. So every time I go through the car park at Heathrow, it just prints it on the receipt. So it's just a software change.
All right. Tim, it's an idea. Let's see what others make of it. Thank you. Let's go to Malcolm in Germany. You've got 30 seconds. Malcolm, you're in Oelde in Germany. Where's that near? What big city that we'd all know?
Dortmund.
Oh, right. Got you.
To the east of Dortmund.
Okay.
I live on the main road. Mm-hmm. And when the kids go to McDonald's or whatever, some of them throw out their debris onto the road. I go out and collect it.
Mm.
And there's the newspaper got hold of this and did a report about me.
Yes.
And the report went to the town hall, and then the town hall came round and gave me all the equipment I need to collect all the rubbish.
Oh, what, like bags and those pointed sticks and everything?
Bags, yeah. I don't know, what are they called?
I don't know what a pointed stick is called, but I can see it in my mind's eye, a litter grabber. I'm going to call it one of those. Auf Wiederhören, Malcolm, thank you. You're the last call. You're coming in from Germany and the situation there. I am done for another day. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien, the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is 40 years, effectively, since Peter, now Lord Mandelson, first dipped his toe into public life. He was a producer at London Weekend Television, alongside such luminaries as Trevor Phillips, who was best man. I think Mandelson was best man at Trevor Phillips' first wedding. And my favourite columnist, David Aronovich, How the Media Works, Chapter 101. But what's wrong with the man? How can he now be looking back upon a career that could have gone down in history as magnificent and will instead be remembered as hideous? Not just failure or shame, but actually hideous conduct.
On your radio,
on the LBC app and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prime Minister is chairing a meeting of his cabinet as police review new allegations against Lord Mandelson. Documents appear to show the former minister leaked government data to Jeffrey Epstein back in 2009. Sir Keir Starmer is now facing accusations of poor judgment in appointing Peter Mandelson as US ambassador in 2024. Plaid Cymru MP Liz Saville-Roberts has told LBC Sir Keir has questions to answer.
Regardless of the fact that, of course, the Prime Minister would have been advised, somebody else would have done due diligence, I guess, in appointing Peter Mandelson as the ambassador to the USA, and also in appointing him to the House of Lords. But where was the Prime Minister's judgment in this, and those who were advising him as well?
Peter Mandelson hasn't responded to the latest revelation, but has previously denied wrongdoing. Separately, Sarah Ferguson's charity will close after the latest revelations about her friendship with Epstein, and Bill and Hillary Clinton have agreed to testify in a US House investigation into the late sex offender. In other news this morning, Ukraine says Russia fired more than 70 missiles at the country overnight. The strikes again targeted energy infrastructure during freezing conditions. At least 9 people have been injured. The government is to cover the travel costs of children and young people in England who have cancer. Families often have to spend large amounts of money travelling to and from appointments and treatment. The plans will be rolled out next year. The Care Minister Karen Smith's told LBC it aims to remove barriers to treatment.
It's not means tested, and that's a really important point because it means that we can get to everybody more rapidly and take out that extra step of filling out more forms and means tested. We estimate the £10 million will cover that. It's about 1,900 families.
And Elon Musk is merging his space and AI businesses into a single company. The billionaire has repeatedly said he wants to develop technology to allow data centres to operate in space. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 7 at 10,335. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, a wet and breezy day for most. Some hill snow for parts of Wales, the east of Scotland and northern England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. We return inevitably to the Epstein story, the Epstein files, but specifically, I think, to start with, to Peter Mandelson. Although, if I can be completely honest with you for a moment, I'm still really wrestling with the topics that we tackled yesterday. I'm really struggling to understand why more people don't seem to be focusing and zoning in on the maintenance of contact, the resumption of warm relations after Epstein was jailed for soliciting a child for prostitution. I know how I you know, a PR rehab. We had a brilliant call yesterday, didn't we, from the lady with experience in sort of international crisis management and the tactics that you deploy to make sure that the world moves on. These are dark arts. The likes of which normal folk like you and me will never really have need to call upon. I don't know why, but I have to be careful what I say because I don't want to get sued before lunch. There was a case some years ago where the guilty got off, or one of them sort of got his punishment massively reduced because he claimed he had dementia. And then some years later, he sort of had it miraculously recovered, and he was very, very rich. And there is a sort of language, isn't there? There's a vocabulary of great wealth. I think Epstein was worth in excess of $500 million when he died. There's a vocabulary of great wealth that the rest of us simply can't grasp, I think. We can't really get our head around. Yeah, here it is. He was called Ernest Saunders, and he was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment, but was released after 10 months as he was believed to be suffering from Alzheimer's disease. He subsequently recovered. I've got no more to say about the subject, but I'm not going mad. That was in my mind. It was a big fraudulent attempt to manipulate the share price of the Guinness company. And you kind of find yourself wondering whether, what would you be like? Would you be like this? So look, Mandelson, I have to again be slightly careful what I say because I don't want to be sued before lunch. I don't particularly want to be sued after lunch either. Can I be absolutely clear about that? But I'm not on the radio after lunch, so the likelihood would be much, much slimmer. The allegations that Mandelson is facing now are not like the other ones. I mean, me, with my peculiar obsession with the fact that they all stayed friends with him, whether you're talking about Andrew or his wife, Sarah Ferguson, or whether you're talking about Elon Musk wanting to go to his parties after he was convicted of procuring a child for prostitution. I don't know whether or not Elon Musk was sending him emails asking if he could go to his parties for a big rave-up before he was convicted of procuring a child for prostitution. But you see, I know that he was doing it after. On what possible planet do you find yourself keener to party with someone after they've been done for procuring a child for procuring a minor, if you prefer, for prostitution? You don't want to party with him before that, but you want to party with him after that. What on earth? What, I mean, you see what I mean about being obsessed with this element of the story? I can't get past it. And I'm not alone. Obviously, a large part of the scandal involves people maintaining contact with him after this particular conviction was secured, when he was already essentially established as a paedophile. But that's not a big enough offence to cut off contact. Ah, man, here's a game you probably don't want to play. How much would you have to love somebody to maintain contact? I mean, a family member, your closest friend ever gets done for procuring a child for prostitution. Do you stay? Do you have to stay? I mean, I have some borderline insight into this because a lot of teachers at both of my schools, as you know, ended up being jailed for paedophilia, for child sex abuse against some of my peers. And you don't change your view immediately. It's weird. If you've got fond memories of somebody, I really hate this about them, actually. I hate the fact that you don't have many fond memories if you go to schools like mine. Maybe that's not true or fair, but they can be very bleak and brutal places. Don't get your violins out. They're the most expensive schools in the world, but they turn out emotionally crippled weirdos who find it very easy to become prime minister, but not to admit vulnerability, talk about their feelings, or be present in emotional relationships. And you have fond memories of a monk who was nice to you, Or the teacher that ran the rugby team. And then, you know, there are rumours. There's possibly more than rumours. But when it all becomes clear, I told you about getting a phone call, didn't I, when I was walking over Waterloo Bridge. And my phone rang. And it was West Midlands Police. I haven't thought about this. Well, isn't it strange, the things that pop into your head once you start looking under rocks? It was West Midlands Police. And I remember she said to me, "You've probably been expecting this call." And my first thought was, because my dad had died about 3 months previously, and my first thought was that my dad had done something daft in terms of leaving a car in a car park or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd never had a grievance. I'd never had a bereavement in my life before. And I thought, like, dad had done something, forgotten to do something, and then died. And then it was, I don't know why my brain was doing that, because you just got the mental